Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
At Founders Brewing Company, we set out to create a beer that lets you embrace the unconventional. Mortal Bloom is a radiantly beautiful, hazy IPA that will wrap your taste buds with intense citrus and tropical notes of pineapple and mango. Coming in at 6.2% ABV with big aromatics and no bitterness, it's the perfect beer, if we do say so ourselves. Visit foundersbrewing.com to find Mortal Bloom Hazy IPA.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Today's Carolla Classics is brought to you by Geico. Look, if you own or rent a home, of course it's hard work, but let's make it easy by bundling your policy with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. Makes it super easy. All you got to do is go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. How easy is this?
It's Geico easy.
Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Hello and welcome to Carolla Classics for January 2nd, 2021. Hope you all are enjoying your new year. We are very excited to play you some more clips from over 11 years of podcasting on The Adam Carolla Show. My name is Chris Loxamana, executive producer of The Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Carolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
I'm still writing 2020 on the classics, and then hearing you say 2021 sounded so funny, I almost laughed.
Yeah, it's still weird to say, so there you go.
It's only the second time you've said it.
I know. Well, let's rearrange those numbers and go to a clip from 2012. This one features Darren Lynn Bozeman, who was the director of Saw, or one of the Saw.
Yeah, he's worked on a bunch of the Saw movies, Repo the Genetic Opera. He's an all-around horror aficionado, horror film guy. Mike Dawson recently brought him up on your other podcast, The Water Cooler.
Yes,
it's Adam Carolla Show 912, Darren Lynn Bozeman, Allison Rose, and Brian Bishop. It's from September of 2012. Check it out.
Presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Olney, Illinois. An 18-year-old fast food employee was angered that a 34-year-old man took too long deciding which side dishes to order and pistol whipped him at a Kentucky Fried Chicken. Definitely Not a Jew!
Yeah, Darren Bozeman, director, creator, writer, consumer of alcohol on our program.
This mangria, it's not a joke. Not at all.
It packs a punch.
It really does.
Yeah, but it goes down very easily.
It's a lot smoother than I thought it was going to be.
It's a wine cooler for dudes. What can you say?
You got the whole setup out there, too, which is pretty nice. It's built on in. It's nice. Going to get one of those for the house.
Thank you. Yeah, we have the Mangria tap back there. You pull the mic toward your Mangria cooler there.
There we go.
Thank you.
There we go.
Darren, you know, it's so funny. I was just talking last evening to my buddy Kevin Hench, and I just said, next time we do a film, we just got to do it ourselves. Let's just, like, shoot it ourselves and distribute it ourselves. And The Devil's Carnival is the name of Darren's latest, and Brian and he were talking off the air about Darren going out and doing just completed a 60-city tour. And pre-order, by the way, you can go to you can get the DVD at thedevilscarnival.com. Sean Patrick Flannery stars in this, and it's a horror musical, and we're talking about doing it yourself. So tell people how to do something yourself and why you should do it yourself in the genre of filmmaking.
I think I lucked out. I mean, very early on, I did the Saw movies, and I didn't need at that point, there was a studio behind me, and it was in 3,000 screens. But after I left Saw, the next movies were a lot harder, and they were basically put straight to video. And as a filmmaker, you know, you work years on your life creating something, and then it goes straight to video, and you never see a cent because of creative accounting and the way that works.
Yes.
So literally, I had three straight-to-video movies that followed up the wildly successful Saw films, and it's an awakening. You're like, either I really, really suck bad, mm-hmm. or... you know, I'm doing something wrong here.
What is it in the film business that makes that okay? I mean, I was just talking about going against the Weinsteins, getting an auditor, paying for an auditor, yeah. and getting. I mean, look, you do a book and you sell a book, and they give you an advance, and you have to pay the advance back by selling X amount of copies of the book, and then you get a check if you sell more. And my first book, I've gotten multiple bonus checks. They're just up front with you. They go, you sold another 50,000 copies. Here's a check for 50 grand. And they just give it to you. What is it about this one particular industry where they go, fuck it, you'll never see a fucking penny ever?
Well,
and that's what we do.
We started taking meetings very early on, and we wanted to hear how it actually broke down. I actually wanted to know the percentages that broke down. And it got to a point that even on a best case scenario, you're getting screwed. You're getting fucked on a best case scenario. It doesn't matter. And I don't know it. I mean, here's what kills me. So on The Devil's Carnival, we worked on it for 2 years, and we realized that the minute we signed with someone right off the bat, they're taking 25% just for signing with them. They could put in a day's worth of work or a week's worth of work. They're taking 25% forever. And then on top of that, they're going to give you some unnamed lawyer fees and publicity fees that they're going to throw out whenever they decide they're ready to throw those out. So you have no idea. It's an unquantifiable number. So we said, you know, I had enough of a following with the Saw films and this other movie I did called Repo. We said, screw it. Let's make the DVDs. And on the case of The Road Show, we actually literally called 60 theaters. I called. And with like two other people, we got on the phone and we just started calling them and saying, listen, I directed the Saw films. I want to rent your theater out. I wouldn't do ticket splits with them. I said, I'll give you X amount of dollars. I want 100% of the door.
Four-walling
the theaters. And 90% would said absolutely not. And you had that 10% that said yes. And so we literally plotted a 60-city tour. We got in a van. We literally drove from L.A. to New York to Florida, back to L.A. twice, mm-hmm. and hitting different cities each time. And we sold merch as well, and that was the big thing. We had soundtracks, and we had whatever.
Sure.
We were able to pay back the short or this thing. It was only 60 minutes. By the end of basically midway through the second road tour, we were completely paid off on that. And that was amazing. Now, all of a sudden, we owned a piece of property that had no attachment. There was no studios. There was nothing. And everything at that point on became profitable for us.
Right.
And so when the DVD came around, numerous companies came to us because we had made enough noise on the road show. We'd been we got picked up in some papers of what we were doing. And so we had people come to us and said, let us put your DVD out. And then I started listening to things. It's like they're going to take 25% off just to take me out.
Right.
Then they're going to make the split with iTunes or Netflix. And it got to the point that I'm left with like $1 or $2 per DVD after these years worth of work, sweating in a bus for 60 days. And this was not like a tour bus. I'm talking in that like a horrible smell. It smelled of like sadness and tears and shame. I mean, it was horrible.
Yeah.
And
horrible Calypso group.
Yeah, it was not good. And so we started selling the DVD, and it was crazy because now we own the DVD 100%. And,
but let me cut you off and tell you that the $2 per unit that you were going to get is a hypothetical $2 per unit because at a certain point, 2 years on, you would have went, hey, man, I feel like I've signed 10,000 copies of that movie. We've haven't gotten a penny from you guys. And you go, how about some accounting? And they go, you don't get an email back?
Yeah.
And then you go, can you tell me how many units we've sold in the last 18 months? And they go, no. And that's about it. Like, they don't...
Auditing's a nightmare, too.
It'd be nice if they even tried to lie. They don't even have, like, the dignity of going, here's how many you sold, but we have all these other expenses that are put up against it. They just don't
even
tell you.
They don't even cook the books.
They don't have books. Yeah, no. they don't even give a fuck.
They make it unreachable, too. Like, if I was going to go in and try to audit one of my other movies that I had a percentage in, it becomes a nightmare. You realize you're going to spend tens of thousands of dollars to go in there and look like an asshole. And by the way, you look like the asshole when you go in to audit the books. And that's the other thing.
Yeah. They're going to end up doing to their business, they're going to outsource their own business. Everyone is just going to go, fuck it. I'm doing it for myself. Like, you can have a relationship with somebody where you're an artist, and they're the producers, and then they compensate you, and it's a good thing. They sell a DVD for $12. They give you $2. They keep $10. But their plan is we give you zero, and we keep $12. And how long is that relationship going to last?
It's a good thing.
No, it's not a good thing, Isaac Hayes.
No, but it's, you know, we're releasing the DVD. No. It comes out in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. But what's crazy is the minute the pre-orders went on sale, if we went through Best Buy or Walmart or any of these others, we would have to sell 30,000 or 40,000 to make what we make on 500. So if I sell 500, it's what it would take me to sell 20,000, 30,000.
Is it really that ratio?
It is, because what we're doing, first off, we're selling them at a premium because we're signing and numbering everyone or numbering them. So we've made an exclusive 6,660. That's all we're making.
Uh-huh.
So because they're limited like that, we're able to charge a higher price for them. They're also available at all the Hot Topics. So those are a different disc, but the ones that we're selling that we own, it's crazy. The difference of what Best Buy.
Oh, I just got the 666.
The 666, yeah.
The mark of the entrepreneurial Jew, yeah.
There you go.
Got
there
that.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, but it worked out, and it's, I think more filmmakers will be doing this. If you can, I mean, if you have the initiative and you have a group of artists around you, you can do this. You can call theaters. You can put yourself in theaters.
Well, the whole thing that I've learned, and that's sort of what the whole podcasting world is you don't need millions of viewers or followers anymore. You need a nice, steady, dedicated group that will come out and support you and go to Amazon and click through. And by the way, when you get the DVD off of Amazon, you make sure and click through the banner at AdamCarolla.com and you buy yourself a little mangria and all that kind of stuff. But that's all you need. And I do think that's the way of the future. And you can also shoot a film and edit a film for next to nothing if you have to now, right? I mean, it's a ton cheaper.
No, I mean, cameras now that you can buy at Best Buy, the consumer cameras, I mean, they're so accessible now. You can get a camera for a couple $100s. You can get Final Cut Pro. Every computer now is an editing, you know.
I mean, everyone, you'd have to rent time at an Avid Bay, and you'd have to have a guy who knew how to run at Avids and Final Cut Pro or whatever it was. And it just cost a ton of money. It was like you literally had to go into a place and have a guy who was a professional editor that ran $100,000. Those Avids were $100,000 or whatever they were. Like, it was just impossible. And then, of course, you were dealing with film back in the day, and that was utterly insane. So now you do everything on a digital level.
One thing what else is crazy is I had a movie came out a couple years ago called Mother's Day. We shot it in 2009. It didn't come out for 3 years. And that's the other thing which sucks now about being a filmmaker is you finish a movie and you turn it in to the powers that be, the Weinsteins, the Dimensions, the Lionsgate. And it's up to them when they want to release it. They can say, we're going to release it. This is a big tentpole. We're going to release it in 2 months. Or in the case of Mother's Day, they literally sat on it. It was sat on for years.
Yeah. And hello. I've been waiting for Red Dawn number two. My buddy Tanner Faust did stunt driving on that movie. He told me that 3.5 years ago. I got my pussy wet in like 08.5, and it still hasn't fucking come out yet.
Well, and I think that's one of the things as a filmmaker now, you do have the power to change. Like with Devil's Carnival, we literally filmed it January 11th. We started January 11th, and we were on the road April of the same year. So literally four months basically from when we did it, we were on the road, and it's going to be on DVD just a couple weeks later. I still have movies that literally have been years, and it's not uncommon. I mean, you're talking right there, it happens all the time.
And you can still now, to take it a step further, you can sell it to Sci-Fi or the movie, whatever, Showtime or whatever, right?
Yeah, you can. I mean, we're still going to be, even though we're doing these like special 6,660 discs, we're still on Netflix. We're still going to be on iTunes. You can still do TV deals and all of that. It's just cool because as filmmakers now, you can carve out niches. Like I can say, I want to own exclusively theatrical, or I want to own the direct-to-consumer DVDs and still sell out all the other avenues of it.
Yeah.
So if people are smart, I mean, they can, and to have the initiative, it's, you can still control your destiny.
But ultimately, you're going to have to create a product that people want.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a product that 20 million people want. But you are going to have to get some folks to agree that this is a good product, because there's going to be another product, and those people are going to decide whether to buy it based on the last product.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think No, you're 100% right. But one of the things that does it does suck is going back to the case of Mother's Day. Like, I think to me, when a movie's held, it's a kiss of doom. It's like, okay, this movie's not good. The studio's not releasing it.
It gets a stink
on it. Does. And in the case of Mother's Day, we were purchased by a company who then the company had a lawsuit. And so me and two of the other films got held up in it. Mm-hmm. And so when finally it gets – when that whole thing gets worked out, the stink's there. It's on torrent sites. You can download it for free. You could have downloaded it for free the last 3 years.
Right.
And so how do you try to sell a property with this stink on it? You have the perception out there it's a bad movie.
Was that a horror movie?
It kind of was.
It sounds like a rom-com.
Yeah. You should watch. It's the feel-good movie of the year. Okay. Not really. No, it's
only
not fun at all.
Only if it stars everyone.
Rebecca De Mornay from Risky Business and all of that. But it's
sure.
Holly George's daughter.
Hand that rocks the cradle,
Hand that rocks
right?
the cradle.
Yeah.
There you go.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
By the way, don't shut your mouth if you're going to get some e-voice. They got call recording. Smooth. Yeah. E-voice, baby. They have a cool thing where you just press star 2 and you can record any incoming or outgoing call and then save it and store it right to your computer. Plus, toll-free numbers, call forwarding, hold music. Voicemail to text.
The recording thing's amazing because how many times are you on the phone with someone and like, let me give you a number. Let me tell you the address we're meeting at. Or let me tell you any number of whatever. You're like, I'm driving. Right?
Yeah.
You literally cannot write that down right now.
No, I know. I end up in this 2012, I end up writing shit on my wrist. Like when people, and I also do this on my phone where I go,
you write
hold
it on,
on
your phone?
I'm going to get my keypad and I'm going to punch it into my phone and I realize I can't do that. Yeah. And then I get mad at the phone. Like, why wouldn't your phone let you put a phone number in that someone is giving you? Like, maybe it's the address to a restaurant or something, and someone's going to tweet me and tell me I'm an asshole. But I've had it happen a bunch of times where someone's trying to give me a phone number, and I know they could just email it, but I'm driving. Like, I want to put the keypad on and punch in a phone. Can't do it. You can do it. Well, you don't need to do it, baby, if you have eVoice. How about that? You want to try it for 6 months free? Free. www.evoice.com/Adam and you can click on the eVoice banner at www.adamcarolla.com. That's how you get 6 months free, huh? 6 months free trial. eVoice, your mobile phone at work. All right. So also, you can become much more prolific this way too, Darren Bozeman, yes?
Well, I think what's cool for me, I mean, again, I would have a very everyone that likes Repo or Devil's Carnival. I mean, these are rock operas. They're not for everyone. Like, my dad is not going to go in and sit and watch a rock opera. But there are fans of this. And I think what's cool about it is it's a way that you can directly hit your diehard fan base. There's no casual Devil's Carnival fan. Mm-hmm. It's either you get it or you don't. And I think that's what's cool.
It's like herpes.
It is. It's
you
like
don't
an
have
STD.
Half a herpes.
But like herpes and an STD.
Yeah.
What we tried to do on this road tour is we didn't just show the movie. We made it like a part concert, part live show, part movie, part weird. Like, we showed up to every single city. We had burlesque dancers opening up the shows. We then did like costume contests, giveaways, and then there was the movie. Then there was a Q&A. So we made it like this an event. And what was cool about that, it is like an STD that people would leave and tell their friends.
Yeah.
And then they would want to come back and see it again.
Well, you have to do it because they're going to go back and tweet, and then you're going ahead to the next city. And you want all those people waiting for you.
And we had people drive out, which was crazy. We had people going and literally following behind us, going driving 3, 4, 5 hours to the next stop with us.
Mm.
And so we saw this thing start off kind of small, and by the end of it, it was getting completely sold out every single
you
night.
You had a convoy.
We did.
Now, there's a
we
movie
did.
You should remake.
There we go.
That's a fucking film. That's not a movie.
Is it scary? It's a horror musical, right?
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
The people
show.
That follow the van are the scary.
That's the scary
that's
ones.
That's the scary part. All right. Allison Rosen, how about you give us a little news, and Darren, you crack wise, and we'll have some fun here.
The news with Allison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her iPad. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's Allison. And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with Zip It Cut. It's Allison, Allison.
So, some audio of Mitt Romney speaking to 30 donors at a private fundraiser has been leaked.
I was trying to figure out where he was, because, like, if you're in front of people, don't you know there's audio? But this
you
is
would
just
think.
30 people.
Yeah. And we have a couple clips. People are saying that this is going to hurt his campaign quite a bit. Adam, I suspect you will actually agree with what he said.
I probably will.
Let's hear it.
All right.
There are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the
scandalous part?
Well, that he's saying that basically there are 47 people that...
Percent.
Yeah, 40...
Be nice if 47 it's 47.
People, that wouldn't... Yeah.
Oh, we can just tag them.
Right.
Be awesome. Follow their movements. Make sterilize them, obviously.
Well, it's not entirely clear where the 47% comes from. There are theories that it's based on the idea that 53% don't pay federal income taxes, which that figure has been out quite a bit.
I think it's 47% that don't pay federal. Yeah, that's what it is. That's where he's getting the 47%. The 47% don't pay federal income. That's what he said.
Oh, right. Sorry. 53% of Americans pay federal income taxes.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
That's where that's coming
from.
So
but this is, this is just the he doesn't care about poor people. Is that what this is?
I believe, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And then we have another clip.
My dad, you probably know, was the governor of Michigan and was the head of a car company. But he was born in Mexico. And had he been born of Mexican parents, I'd have a better shot at winning this. But he was unfortunately born of Americans living in Mexico. They lived there for a number of years. And I say that jokingly, but it'd be helpful to be Latino.
Yeah. But, this is one of those things where we're going to try to make something out of it, but he's making a joke. But he's right. I think he's right and making a joke.
There's also playing to the home team. Like, you see coaches a lot. Not the same thing. We see coaches a lot getting in trouble because talking shit about the other team mascot or whatever.
Look.
Talking to donors and boosters and whatever. He's talking to the
How many at the RNC or the DNC folks who were of Hispanic descent would be up there speaking if they were just from some part of Minnesota? Seriously. Villaraigosa's... semi-retarded, who's a philanderer and is running a city into the ground. Do you think they would?
You definitely spun that into a Villaraigosa thing in like 1.5 moves. That was awesome.
Why would they have him out there? Why would they have whoever they have out there?
Both sides do it, right?
Why would they trot out all these people?
It's weird that this is being considered such a coffin nail for his campaign, because to me this is kind of like people who are not in favor of Romney, this is what... We suspect he believes anyway, so what's the big whoop?
But he's saying that 47% of people don't pay federal income tax.
They're dependent on the government. They think of themselves as victims. They think the government has to take care of them. They think they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing. He's spinning that all as a negative thing. I feel like that's sort of a smear across all the people who
is a negative thing.
But do you think publicly his thing is we have to, help everyone and embrace, and he's sort of talking out of both sides of his mouth. I think that's the problem.
Okay. All right. Well, listen. We're at a tipping point in terms of entitlement in this country. We're at about 50-50. We're going to have 50 right now, 50% of the people paying for shit, 50% of the people with their hands out. It'll work for a little while at this. Eventually, it'll get to 70% with the hands out and 30% paying. And those 30% are moving to Europe.
I think that's one of his clips.
Or Canada. And that's it. I don't know. I think California has the highest income tax, or I should say the highest sales tax in the country. If it's not the highest, it's the second highest.
So we're 9%.
Some places don't have any. We have, I think, the highest. I think California has the highest. Jerry Brown is going around trying to get it raised up a little bit so that we can take care of some
overall
issues.
Overall, taxes are at a 30-year low. Like, taxes are super fucking low right now.
No, they're not. They're not super low right now. You can spin this thing any way you want to spin it, but... If you live in California and you make a decent living, you're paying a lot in taxes. You're paying a high percentage in taxes. Whatever it is, raising that base is not going to cure things. We pay the highest, and he wants us to pay a little bit higher so we can fix things. But do you think it's ever fully going to fix anything?
Historically, taxes are extremely low right now. They're the lowest they've been since Truman.
Okay. But let's just say that's true. And look, you could get five people to say that it's true, and you could get five people to say it wasn't true. It's not. It depends how you're arguing it. But let's just say it's true.
Okay.
Would raising it 10% or 20% or 30%, would raising that cure things? Would we get the schools and the roads fixed, is my question. It's not really how much.
I don't think
L.A. Unified.
I don't think lowering it is going to make it any better, because right now taxes are, the five people and I think, or the six people,
right,
taxes are low, and that's not helping any economic woes.
Except for everyone who flees to different places where the tax is lower. I mean,
back to the clip.
My point.
The problem isn't that he said it. The problem isn't even that he believes it. The problem, I think, is that he tries to purport himself to be, yeah, I'm a rich guy, but I identify with the little guy and everyone who's out there struggling. And then he has a foot in both pools, and that's going to be probably damaging to him politically.
But does anyone think he really identifies with the little guy?
That's, I think,
he tries to portray
himself that way.
Here's the thing. Right. I don't want my surgeon to be the little guy, and I don't want my dentist to be the little guy, and I don't want the guy flying the airplane to be the little guy.
Well, how could he reach the pedals?
Yes, I want him to be the 1%. Like, I want the people in charge to be the 1%. I'm fine with that concept. You lead little guys. You let the 1%ers lead. That's the guy. I want the captain of the football team to be the quarterback and to be the 1%er who's got a stronger arm, runs a faster 40, can bench more than me and everyone else in the high school. I want that dude up there. Like, I want the dude. I don't want one of my goofballs. I grew up with the 99%ers. They're fucking retards. They're mostly retards. And by the way, this hardworking retard, no, sometimes just retards. They're not all that hardworking. And they're not all that honest. And they're not all that noble. A lot of them are just fuck-ups. And I want the fucking smart guy. I want the guy with the business background. I want the guy who went to this college and that college. I want that. Let's face it. I'm fine with that. I don't know why we have to start pretending like we need one of us. Do we really want one of the 99%ers up there running the fucking thing? Those guys are usually not that educated and not that hardworking.
Mitt would probably be doing better if he just embraced the whole thing. Yeah, I'm rich, and you all should aspire to be rich, too.
He'd
probably be doing better.
This is how I got here.
Yeah, if he took a different tact other than, hey, I'm with you guys, I'm trying to help you guys, like, he's probably not with us or them.
Here's the thing. When did these guys have to be with us? Like, your school principal's the principal of the school. He doesn't have to be with you. He doesn't have to be against you. He just has to run the school the best he can run the school.
Like Mr. Belding.
Yes, and your job is to work hard,
exactly,
study,
like
get good grades, go off to Cal or SC or UCLA or Harvard and never see the guy again. He's not there to build the school around you, and you're not there to ask him what he can do to make school better for you. He just fucking runs the school the best way he can run the school. That means you have the opportunity to get an A in algebra or an F in algebra. That means you can show up every day and stay after and run for president, or you can flunk out. Now, if you say, I want to run for president, and he says, sorry, girls can't run for student body president, then we have an issue. And if he says, people of color can't do this, or your parents are from the wrong side of the tracks, you're not going to graduate this high school, then we have an issue. But unless he's doing that, just run the fucking high school. Just keep the lights on in the high school, keep the doors open, keep it safe, and then we'll figure out who the A students are and who the F students are. And so that's how life works. And that's all I want out of the president. I don't even like, what's he going to do for me? They'd do nothing for me. Get out of the way, make the playing field even, and we'll get to work.
I want to be friends with him on Facebook.
Yes. The principal or the president?
The president.
Yes.
And all the right. Principal.
Do we have another clip, or is that...
That's it for that. But I have a story which I think that you'll like, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this guy in Houston area he got a traffic ticket for $137.
Oh, I'm so in love with this individual.
And he paid with 137 origami pigs made out of dollar bills that he put in donut boxes.
The YouTube clip is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the cashier who was paying said, "What's that? I'm not going to take them like that. The way you have it folded, I'm not going to sit here and unfold all of that."
Mm-hmm.
Which you'd think would kind of be the highlight of a cashier's day.
Did you see? Mm-hmm. They came out and they were all ball busting him at the very end. They wanted to take pictures with him and the pigs before they made him unfold them all.
Yeah, I love that. Every once in a while, the guy would go down to City Hall and pay with pennies and do all that kind of stuff. I like that. But the origami pigs, I like in the, what's that, Winchell's?
In a donut box.
Krispy Kreme box.
The cop, the guy actually comes out halfway through it and goes, I get the joke, pigs in a donut box. And then he was completely unamused, and then he wanted his picture with him. It was great.
Yeah. So he's a hero. And I was
watching. 6 hours folding them.
Somebody, well, I would outsource that shit immediately.
Yeah, I know.
Origami. Like, I would have just walked into every sushi joint on Ventura Boulevard and went, all right, who's got some extra time here? Like, we're between lunch and dinner. It's 2:30 in the afternoon. I know some of you guys got nimble fingers
but
and plenty of time.
You know that someone would accidentally make a T-shirt or a swan out of it?
Yeah. But that's the whole thing. Once you, here's the thing about origami. You can't, it's like bad kids art. Yeah, what the kid does is he goes, this is me, and that's Molly, and we're playing tetherball on the moon. And you go, oh, yeah. But if they just handed it to you, you wouldn't go, oh, you and Molly look like you're having a spirited tetherball game on the moon. Or is that Saturn? You wouldn't get that.
Right.
You wouldn't know what it was. So origami's one of those things where they hand it to you, and they go, it's a swan. And then you go, oh, yeah. But if they say it's a pig, you just go, oh, yeah.
Yes, like constellations. We've talked about this. That doesn't look like a
that's
dish
Orion's
or a
belt up there. You can see the sword coming down. Like,
it's Athena's navel. No, it's
yeah,
not.
No, it's not. Yeah, even the dippers are a little bit tough. But I like this. I was Somebody tweeted me. We'll show it to you later. Maybe later in the week. They showed me L.A. parking enforcement guy writing a ticket to somebody who had 5 minutes on their meter. And they just do that that thing that all parking people have to have all their nerve endings taken out with soldering irons so they can just kind of like zomba walk their way through. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Darren, that's your next movie.
And the guy's filming him, and he's going, hey, I got 5 minutes left on my meter. And he's like, okay, all right, there you go. There's your ticket. And they do that move. I've had it happen where you go like, all right, let me see your ID because I need to see your ID because I got to call you. I have to call your manager or whatever and report you.
Right.
And they hold it, and they do this fucking weird thing where they hold it by – they hold the lanyard by the string and they move it around.
You're
like, it's a weird passive aggressive fucked up
right.
move. Yeah,
I got a $500 parking ticket. I didn't think that was possible.
Handicap.
My two tires, like my back tires, it was just maybe a foot into the blue. That was it. It was like the blue was still there. And I walked up to the guy and he hands me the ticket. And I was like, $500? Are you joking? And he said, not a joke, not at all.
Handicap.
Yeah, it was a $500 ticket.
Yeah,
I had to pay it.
My buddy. Philip the Juggler took his dog. You want to talk about a fucking expensive handicap ticket? There's a park like in Reseda by his condo. How's that mangria treating you?
It's great.
It was an empty. He used to bring his dog. He had a big like Rottweiler. Oh shit! I'll think of what it
was. Weimaraner.
Like, yeah. No. It was a.
Look at you, AKC.
Wait, yeah. Did you go from Rottweiler to Bichon?
I'm sitting in Bichon.
Weimaraner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just a big old jug-headed, it was actually a pit bull, but it was a big old beast, right? Yeah. And he'd take this thing out and run it like a thoroughbred. And he had this habit of just going to this park by his house at night. And it was like middle of the night, but no one would fuck with him because they had this huge beast with him. And he pulled into the parking lot, and the parking lot's completely empty because it's just a city park, and it's like 10:30 at night, you know, so there's not a human, there's no cars in there. So he just pulls straight out the street. And straight up the driveway and just straight ahead at night, gets out of the car and starts throwing the tennis ball to his dog out in just this open, you know, summertime, nighttime kind of thing. And he is in a handicap parking spot, which is the straightaway, the one when you pull up the driveway, you just sort of pull straight into it. If you just pull straight, but the parking lot is entirely empty and there's no other cars in it. And it's at night, so you can't really see the blue, whatever. Gets the $500 ticket in the middle of the fucking night. And again, I understand why you have handicap parking zones, and I understand why you enforce that, but this is not why you enforce it. This is letter. This is not spirit. And the second parking or TSA or the cops start going for letter instead of spirit, we're all fucked as citizens. Meaning, we talked about this before off the air, but I've complained about it a million times. You can travel with something that's 3.4 ounces in your toiletry bag. It used to be 4 ounces, and then they moved it down to 3.4 ounces. You can have a container that says 4 ounces of medicated prescription mouthwash with a half inch at the bottom of it, and the guy will say, throw it away. And you'll say, look, this thing is 9 inches tall, and there's a half inch at the bottom. So clearly, under 3.4 ounces, and the guy says, the thing says 4 ounces on it. We're not allowed to travel with containers. Yes, that's so you don't have 4 ounces of liquid, you know, of nitroglycerin or C4 or whatever. But this cannot be that. The container's 4 ounces, but there's a half an ounce at the bottom. You have to throw it away. All right, that's letter of the law. And when you start getting into letter, then your bumper's hanging into the blue, or Phillips car's parked in the whatever, or you're going 3 miles an hour faster than the post. It's being... Once it's letter and not spirit...
Or you're on the wrong side of the street, even though they've already cleaned the street.
Right. We're fucked. Now we're fucked because no one can really escape letter. I mean, letter is... You know, no tearing the label off your mattress and no chewing gum while you're at a pig auction or whatever the fuck it is. I mean, we don't all know
the pig's
letter.
Are they doing that, though, because they have a criteria to make? Like, I heard that thing, like, every month
they
have
to... They're not paid to think.
Yes. Their criteria... Here's the thing with the tickets. They go, we have no criteria. Like, we don't have
quota?
Quota. I meant yeah, quota, sorry, not quota. Criteria. Yeah.
We don't have quotas for tickets. And I go, all right. So if you just wrote no tickets for a year, you'd be no, oh yeah, you'd get fired. Yeah. So it's like, all right, that's a built-in quota. I mean, even though there's not a number assigned to it, you must go out and earn your weight in tickets and then some every day. Yeah. We had this funny thing, which was sort of cool and sort of asinine-ish at the same time. L.A. is the only town where you worry about jaywalking. Every other town, one of the great things about travel is going to other towns and jaywalking. I'll sometimes just leave my hotel in the middle of the night and just jaywalk all fucking night in my black hoodie drunk. Probably not the greatest idea. Yeah, but it's like awesome because L.A., you're totally freaked out and everyone's gotten a chicken shit jaywalking ticket in L.A. But when you travel about, you don't have to worry about it. And we were in Dallas. And it was one of those intersections that had like the light rail thing on it, and the trolley went by. And when the trolley went by, everybody just started walking across. There were like 10 people, and there was this big fat cop on the other side. And you're so don't care about it in other cities that there was a cop standing, not on a big wide intersection, a close intersection, just standing there, fat guy. Fat LAPD standing there. There'd never be like 8 people walking right at him. Mm-mm. And everyone just walked right at him. And he stopped us in the middle of the street and he went, hey, go back and wait. But his hey was, Jesus Christ, I'm standing right here. Like, come on. Like, you know, I'm not going to give you a fucking ticket, but you have to rub it in. Like, there's no way I'm going to write any of you a jaywalking ticket. But let's not be so fucking blatant that I'm standing on the other corner facing you and portly.
Did he give you a noogie?
He gave us a... It was funny. He just gave us like, come on.
What's the worst or most ridiculous ticket? I was arrested my first week in Los Angeles. I was booked. I was thrown in the slammer. I was given the jumpsuit for nunchucks in my trunk. I had a... At the time, the best part was they were plastic. They weren't even real. I was a martial artist, and I just moved here, and I actually had a permit to carry them. And I was literally a showman at martial art tournaments doing nunchucks. And so he pulls me over and says, we're going to search your car. And I ran a stop sign. I was like, I had nothing to hide. I'm like, okay. This is right in front of the Hustler store on Sunset.
Sure.
Next thing I know is he goes,
where?
He goes, sir, you're going to put your hands behind your back and lean against your door.
Sir, what I need you to do for me right now is go ahead and put your hands behind your back and lean against the door, okay, for me right now?
So next thing I know, I got handcuffs on me, and this is the most dick thing ever, is my ID was from Kansas. And as he's clicking the handcuffs, he goes, well, son, you're not in Kansas anymore.
You're not in Kansas anymore. And we found a pair of noon or none chucks in there. There seems to be quite a debate over the precinct.
And I just wondered, like, and I had to spend the night in jail, and then, the night in jail, and I actually had a court date with Winona Ryder. It was the same time that Winona Ryder was arrested for her whole thing way back when, and
that's
they eventually
cool for it a guy
was,
from
but,
Kansas.
Very
but
for
what
someone,
was not
yeah,
cool is it was 3 months away. So when I was arrested to when I actually had to do it, and so 3 months of me literally sweating, freaking out, thinking I'm going to jail, and I just wondered, like, I want to know the quota or criteria they have in arresting something that stupid. Like, there's plastic nunchucks in a guy's trunk.
I want you to travel the globe with me because I want you, I say this all the time. If you were black, what other opinion could you draw other than driving while black? Like, and you would be telling the story and everyone would be incensed. Like, with plastic nunchucks in your trunk and you were arrested. It's like, there's no other conclusion to be drawn than they're racist. LAPD's racist. And obviously, if you're a white guy wearing those frames, there's no way anyone would do this to you. And I fucking explain to people all the time, cops are assholes. And they're almost colorblind assholes, but that means they'll be assholes to everyone. Because this is insane, but yet everybody I know, and I don't have one that's this bad. I'm one of the guys. I've had a motorcycle towed 3 times, which is pretty good. I had the fucking motorcycle
3 times, fool.
There's nothing worse than being poor and like me saying to the cop, "Listen, I am poor. This is going to devastate me. And by the way, here's what we're going to do. You're going to tow my bike. You're going to put it in an impound yard. I'm going to have to hitchhike home. I'm then going to go to the DMV and get a temporary motorcycle license, which doesn't involve riding a motorcycle. So how does it make me any safer on a motorcycle? Then I'm going to go to the impound yard with $80 that I don't have. I'm going to get on the same bike, and 9 hours later, I'll be on the bike riding at home. Not after taking a bunch of weekend classes with pylons in the parking lot."
And he's like, "Yep, that sounds about right."
And I said, "Could I please just put," I was on Laurel Canyon. I said, "Could I just push it off to the side street?" There's a side street right there. I said, "I'll just push it right here and I'll just park it right here and I'll give you the keys. Like, just don't tow the bike. I can literally just push it and park it."
He wasn't amenable to that?
Gotta tow it. Well, I was thinking, why does he need my bike? Like, why does he fucking need my bike? So I had a driver's license, but I didn't have a motorcycle driver's license, a C4, C3, or whatever the fuck it was. And he just said, "No, towing it." And I just started. He just watched me hold my helmet and just start walking down Laurel Canyon. And I was completely fine with him.
I was really excited.
No problemo.
Someone broke into my car last week and they stole my iPad. And I was so excited because I could finally activate that tracking iPad software. Mm-hmm. And so I immediately called the police. And I had security cameras outside of my house. And so I've got the person who did it. And I was like, I know where they are. And I see them moving. They're like moving right now. They're going down Ventura. They're almost to Tujunga. And the cop's like, "Yep, not going to do anything." And I'm like, no, he just passed Tujunga. He's now going to hit Colfax. And they're like, "Nope, not going to do anything." And so there's that moment, like, do I chase them? Do I get in my car? And we did. We couldn't find them, but they wouldn't do anything.
Wait, when will the cops do something?
They won't. They said they can't. They won't do it. They won't track. Even though that you have tracking software on your iPad or your computer or your cell phone, they won't go after it. They won't.
They're promoting vigilantism is what they're doing.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I'm like, so should I get in my car and go off and try to find these people?
See? But I'm telling you that a few months back when that guy or those guys were shot, one guy was killed. The guy was killed in Pasadena because the guy got his computer stolen and he said they took it at gunpoint. And then the cops rolled up on the guy with the computer or without the computer, whatever, and they shot the guy. Now, I said this is the cops' fault, and this is all our fault because – not all our faults, but what the cops do is if you go, "Look, somebody stole my computer," they go, "Yeah, and so what? I like macaroni and cheese." Like, hold on a second. You don't understand. You're calling us like we're the cops. We're only the cops when you roll through a four-way stop sign. Yeah. We're only the cops when your bumper's going into the blue handicap and an inch, or you're going 3 miles an hour over the posted speed limit. You don't understand. We're those cops. We're not the cops that goes out and looks for your shit.
Macaroni
we're the cops. We're the cops that find you and hands you chicken shit tickets. We don't
macaroni
do.
Cheese.
You're watching way too much TV, son. We don't do that shit. So, you would like the cops to roll on this laptop computer of yours that was stolen, that for a lot of guys, especially poor junior college students, it's like a fucking big ticket durable good for them.
Yeah.
Then you say to the cops, "Oh, the guy pulled a gun on me and he took my laptop." In which case, they will go look for your laptop.
Yeah.
If somebody just snatched your laptop, you're on your own. So now you're creating this environment where you have to call the cops and you have to up the ante.
You should say he had nunchucks.
Nunchucks. That's right. Plastic nunchucks.
Do you have the plastic ones, like for demonstration?
They were demonstration, yeah.
And you had a license to carry them?
And I had a license, but the thing is that the nunchucks are illegal. They charged me with concealment of a blunt force object. It was concealment of deadly weapon.
Oh, Jesus.
California and Maine are the two places you're not allowed to have nunchucks, I found out.
That's why it's so safe in these two states.
They hopefully told you that as they
put
you in
the car.
But
you know, I was actually in TV, like a real movie situation where I'm thrown into the hold. They put you in a holding cell before you get booked. There was another guy in there, and the first question as I get thrown in there is the guy says, "What did you do?" And like I literally sat there for
get
like
on
trying
the
to
mic. Would you? Sorry,
so this guy, as I'm thrown in the holding cell, said, "What did you do?" And I'm sitting there. Do I tell him I got arrested for plastic nunchucks, or do I try to make something up? And so there was that whole dilemma in my head. What am I going to tell this guy? And I eventually told him that it was plastic nunchucks. But yeah, 24 hours, a full full day, full night.
Yeah, but I do. It's pretty straightforward for me.
Yeah.
Black dude says, "What'd you do?" I say, "Killed a Mexican." Mexican asked me what I did, and let's face it, you're not going to get a lot of, you know, no. Eastern Indians and Jews in there. It's pretty much going to be a black guy or a Mexican guy. So, black guy, killed a Mexican. Mexican guy, I just said, killed a black dude. Black dude. And white dude, I just stick with black dude.
Yeah.
Play safe. You know, I just play that. You know, you never know.
What but if you get someone where you can't tell? Like, they might be Mexican and they might be black.
Well, that's tough.
Ooh,
Derek Teeter.
Then I just go with arson. Burn a cop's house to the ground.
Good.
You know what I mean?
I hope when you're drunk you have someone role play this with you so that you won't make a mistake.
Occasionally I flavor it with kill the guy for asking too many questions.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. You know what
Smart.
I mean?
Smart.
Mm-hmm. Or I stick with the super intimidating none of your beeswax.
Oh, the beeswax goes over pretty line. Good yeah, in the it really tank. Does.
Yeah. Oh, here's my point. I've said it once a million times. Cops, please do what we want you to do, not what you think's going to make you rich or fix things, or somehow what you want to do. Just do what we would like you to do, and here's what we don't want. We don't want Darren Bozeman and his plastic nunchucks spending the night in a tank. That we don't want, but we do want you going after the guy who snatched his iPad. That we do want. So start doing what the fuck we tell you to do, and no other human being will say this to the cops except for me. And sorry for sounding like Bill Cosby, but what the fuck? Nobody will talk about it. And that the point that we're scared of the cops is my point. We're not supposed to be scared of the cops. You know who's supposed to be scared of the cops? Criminals. Felons. People who sell drugs and run guns and cook meth, they're supposed to be scared of the cops. We are the citizens who live in the town, who own homes, some of us. We pay taxes, and we then
some
pay more taxes. And
I
then,
get it. You own homes.
Yes.
Bully for you. Darren, do you own a home?
We bought our first house.
Guess I'm the odd one out. Right. Odd man out. Yeah.
We pay taxes, and the deal is you guys sort of drive around, and you kind of look for bad guys. And then occasionally, if someone breaks into our home where we pay the property taxes on, we then ask that you show up at the house. Not just show up when we roll through the four-way stop, but you actually show up when there's crime. But everyone's chicken shit. Everyone's scared, and no one will say a fucking thing about the cops. And the fact that we're scared of the cops is the worst sign ever. They're not scared of cops. I swear to God. I think we're in Tucson, and every time you'll notice it. It happened to me in where was I? I was in Louisiana, and we were driving New Orleans. And blew right past the cop in the van I was driving in, and I was screaming at the guys, "Cops, cops, cops, slow down. We just blew right past him, and the guy looked at me and he went, "He's got bigger fish to fry than me." And we blew right past him, and when I was in, I think it was either Dallas or Tucson, I just saw a cop car. Mike August and I were walking down to where Kennedy was shot, so actually now I know it was Tucson. And we're going to go down and see the bluff and the grassy knoll and the book depository and everything. And we're walking down there. We just stopped at a stoplight, and there's a cop car parked right in the front of the stoplight. There's another one that was three or four car lengths behind. And when the light turned green, the guy who was next to the cop car, just like driving a town car, just got on it. Just got into it. Just put his foot into it.
Like
and
drag
just, it just,
racing.
It just started leaving the cop behind him. And then a couple more cars blew past the cop that was like in second place. And I said, Mike, would you ever see that in
not
L.A.?
In LA.
Would
no.
you ever for a second see in L.A. like the signal change? And the guy didn't burn rubber. It's just he was just driving. But he was just pulling away from the cops. Like, no way. You're fucking right next to that guy.
On the 405, you can be in rush hour and a cop will go in 30 miles an hour. No one's passing that cop. And it's
right.
horrible.
You won't even pass the fucking cop.
No.
So we are scared of the cops in this city. We are not supposed to be scared of the cops because we are part of the citizenry who pay for the cops in this city, and they should be our friends, not the people we fear. All right, let me tell you about someone I don't fear, someone I use, someone I love, Stamps.com.
Ooh, let's say you have 6,660 DVDs. Ooh,
you know we're
out.
Using Stamps.com. Ah. We are using Stamps.com.
Wow!
So
perfect.
There you go. That for a
that is kismet. Perfect. Yeah, you can try Stamps.com because you have to send out all those DVDs.
We're mailing them from my guest house. Yes, we are.
That's right. Your directing. Newly purchased guest house.
There it is.
Or I call it a guest home. You can print official U.S. postage for any letter or package. You do it right on the computer, and pow, you save money. Yeah, because otherwise you weigh each one. You know what is the exact amount, by the way, the Devil's Carnival costs to send, you know?
We weigh them, but we are charging, since we're shipping some out of seas and are going all over the place, we're just doing one lump thing. So it's $4.99 is what we're paying.
Mm-hmm. But you're in business with Stamps.com.
We're in business with Stamps.com.
That's right, because you're a businessman.
I'm a businessman.
And you want to save money.
And time.
Special. Yes. That's right. Special offer. And I would argue that time is money.
Mm-hmm.
Although, it's hard to buy beer with it. Special no-risk trial. Oh, you can gush about it later. $110 offer, by the way, including digital scale, $55, free postage only. If you enter Adam, go to stamps.com now. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Adam. That is stamps.com. Promo code Adam. All right, Allison Rosen, bring it home, girl.
That's the news. I'm Allison Rosen. Zip it, cunt.
That was the news with Allison Rosen.
Let's see. Irvine Improv tomorrow, everybody. Wednesday, Brandon T. Jackson's going to be up on stage with us.
My favorite Jackson.
Also, Crown Plaza Hotel in Ventura coming up next Wednesday. These are live podcasts. Foxwoods Casino, Connecticut, doing some stand-up. Like I said, the Dennis Prager thing and me from Dallas and Orlando. Yeah, Orlando. Tampa. Yeah, should be on up real soon for your consumption. And Allison Rosen is your new best friend, by the way. You can check it out now in our app and iTunes as well. Andrew W.K.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loves that guy, by the way.
He wants to eat shit at some point in his life. And he talked about it a little bit.
I feel like that's one of those, I already know, I got the answer to that before.
Hey, if you haven't tried it, how do you know, Adam?
Yeah, it's true. You really
know.
Don't know.
What's stopping him? He's the only one who can stop or make it happen.
He wants to build up his tolerance of disgustingness level, first of all. He just feels like it's one of those bucket list things that he wants to enjoy later in his life.
Mm-hmm.
You got to respect that.
It's one of those chamber pot bucket list things. Andrew W.K. Anyway, AllisonRosen.com. And you got that for more information. Also, my buddy Ray, Don't Tell Ray Party Pack, we have a Don't Tell Ray t-shirt. And people, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but we used to have DTR parties, which were Don't Tell Ray parties. My buddy Ray was so nuts, and he'd throw everyone in the pool, and he'd put his fist through the birthday cake and all that kind of stuff, that we'd actually have parties that were Don't Tell Ray parties. And somebody made a Don't Tell Ray t-shirt, and we got a little t-shirt and an autographed book, by the way. There's a Ray chapter in the Not Taco Bell material, so it's available now through our store.
That was Darren Lynn Bousman, Allison, and Brian from 2012.
Speaking of horror filmmaking, Chris, I have a bone to pick.
Sure.
I believe it's Mike Dawson who picks out the birthdays for the birthday segment for the guests.
He does, yes.
And Mike Dawson also proclaims to be a horror aficionado and fan of the genre. Is that not true?
He loves horror.
But he mistakenly left out the birthday of Kane Hodder, the second most famous guy in the entire genre after Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger. That is the guy who played Jason Voorhees in films 7, 8, 9, and 10, and he is a legend. And John Schneider, the guest, had to remind Adam, who Adam would have been fine with. He's as famous as like Bruce Campbell almost, so it wouldn't have mattered. I feel like Dawson missed the boat on that one. I'm going to call him out.
You can absolutely call him out. It's always
Dawson doesn't know who Kane Hodder is.
It's always tough when the celebrity mentions another birthday that we miss. But look, it's a fun
John movie. Schneider. It's cool though. Now I'm a John Schneider fan.
Oh, me too. And what a voice!
I mean, I already was, but now I'm really into him.
Yeah, he was a really really cool guy. I'm really happy with that interview. All right, let's get going with another clip. This one from 2012, and we're going to bring in some Dave Damashek.
This is Adam Carolla Show 940, Shadow Stevens, not in this portion. Dave Damashek, Allison Rosen, Brian Bishop. Dave's making his triumphant return for more number one sports, which is like, wow, they've been doing it that long. They do the number one sports segment, and we get the show opening, and this is part one. We'll play part two tomorrow with the Shadow Stevens interview. Until then, check out the opening of the show.
Good day, Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
Good day, Bald Brian.
Oh, there's some meat in here. Oh, man, speaking of meat. Oh, did I take a nap today? Oi.
You're going to bring this around, right?
Yeah, I'm bringing it around. Oh, I'm bringing it home. Head first, right under the tag. I was doing Dan Dunn. Dan Dunn wrote Living Loaded. He's got a Sirius XM show called Happy Hour. I've done a show before. The problem is the show is about drinking, so then you get drunk mm-hmm. doing his show, and then... But
I think we got drunk when he did our show.
It's noon. Yeah, it's hard to avoid being drunk.
He's the
drunk.
Guy that brought the booze in.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
The,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's a funny guy. He's a great guy. He was a writer. I mean, he was like a booze writer for Playboy. And it's like, he literally, like, they would send him to, you know, Scotland to test out booze, you know, and all the events, and he'd like... Go to places, get drunk, and then write about it. Like the greatest job yeah. of all time. So I've done his show a few times. I read his book. I think I don't think I wrote a foreword for it. I think I read it. For me, you know, I've read two books in my life, and his was one of them. That's what it sounds like.
Writing that foreword must have taken a long time.
Yeah, really. Do we have to go with Dan? Can we just be duh? Or D, done? Does it Dan? Does that be so formal? Wow. I mean, I don't mind doing a guy a favor, but Dan? Right. Three yeah. whole letters?
Who's the king of England now?
Yeah, but besides D.N. Dunn or D. Dunn sounds much more... It's much cool. more literary. So we go into this barbecue joint called Baby Blues, which is he's part ownership of. And it's a really good place in West L.A., I'm sure.
The one on Venice?
No, not the Venice one, the one on Santa Monica.
Ooh.
And delightful. So he starts bringing out the barbecue. And I'm serving up the mangria because now I'm bringing my booze. Mm-hmm. Touche. Booze about is fair play, my friend.
That's right.
That's right.
Don't be a one-upper, like I said before.
So I bring out the mangria, and we're drinking the mangria, and we're doing our thing. And he brings out this guy named Simon Ford, who's a mixologist. And we can pull up the guy's name or resume or whatever. Looked him up. And this guy's a big-time guy. He's hot. He's English. Wow. He's here. He's launching his own booze line. I guess bartenders are becoming like what DJs were 8-10 years ago, like celebrity bartender comes in. There's Simon Ford.
They're riding the coattails of celebrity chefs.
Yeah.
The celebrity chef thing.
Right. You know, it's like and they're mixologists. Yeah. So they come in and he bartends one night and this, that, and the other. But of course, I don't know who the guy is because I'm not hip on my mixology. And he said, Dan Dunn said, I brought in Simon Ford, the guy.
Duh.
He's, yeah, duh.
Duh.
Duh said, I brought in Cy. He's he's the best in the business. This guy's the greatest.
They said he'd never mix again.
He wouldn't come out of retirement, but I said we needed the best. He said, why me? So he was living in a cabin in Montana with a hunting dog. So I said after his wife was killed when a martini shaker exploded, he swore he'd never mix again.
He can't even look at olives.
That's right. So I said, why him? And he said, he's the best. And I said, all right, well, that's fine. And then he said, I asked him to make a cocktail out of mangria. And I just did the thing that I do with everything, which is, like, you know, the best. You know, when somebody's like, I don't know, life coach or hairstylist, and you see what they've done to someone's hair, and you mm-hmm. go, that's fantastic. Sam would have done about the same
right.
thing, you know. So he said, yeah, I'm going to go make a cocktail out of mangria. And I said, well, mangria's already a cocktail. So
you already mixologized it.
So you're going to remixologize it? And he said, yeah. And I said,
remix.
All right, give it a
like
shot.
He's like the Puff Daddy of bartenders.
He's in a cover of your drink.
Duran Duran. So I said the extended dance mix. So I said, yeah, go ahead. So he went and he made something. He said, well, is there any booze you don't like? And I said, I'm not really fond of gin. And then I got really defensive when they were like, oh, gin, we like gin. Well, no, I'm saying I don't have anything against gin. Give me a gin and tonic. I'll drink it. Suck it right out of your cock right now. You put a straw in your ass, sit on gin and tonic. I'll suck it right out of your cock. Don't say I don't like gin. Yeah. But I say if I had to pick one that I could do without, you know, yeah. I would say gin. So he said, fine. So he went mixed up. Dan and I went and did the show. And about 20 minutes later, he shows up with a drink, and I didn't do it in front of you. It looked like a margarita. It was just sort of yellow in color. And I said, this is mangria? This is your cocktail? And he said, no. And then he poured it over the top of it, fancy. And it all just sort of sunk down very slowly as I was unable to recreate here in the studio. And then I took a sip of it, and I was like, God damn, it's the best thing I've ever had in my life. And I did my best. Then he gave me, and I'll give you guys the ingredients if you like, or the combination, the recipe. He gave it to me.
We should set the scene. We were actually presented with drinks before the mics even heated up.
Yes.
Which is a nice trend, by the way. I hope this continues.
Yes. So, and the reason I'm sweating profusely is because I've realized I have an allergic reaction almost to citric acid, and I just got done wringing out a bunch of lemons and tasting them, and I'm actually
lemons and Corolla sweat in this?
There's heart. There's a lot of Corolla heart in here. No, actually, I had Matt do lemon.
Oh,
all right. So take a shot of that.
It is really good.
It's good pod.
Yeah, it is. I was like, wow, this shit is good. And it was also, he made it with rye, which is something I've never drank in my life, at least to my knowledge. I'm not
rye
guy.
To put rye
is rye now?
Yeah, rye's very hip.
Yeah, and this is 75-80% of what he did, because he's what he's him and I'm me. But
he did
delightful.
A great job of killing the taste of the mangria.
Thanks, douche.
The thing that's great about it is I felt like mangria just wasn't strong enough.
Well, now you got 2 ounces
problem
of rye solved. In there. So it is 2 ounces of rye, and he said you can use any kind you want. It's 1 ounce of fresh lemon juice. It's a 1/2 ounce of simple syrup, and it's 2 ounces of mangria dumped over the top and sort of mixed up in a martini shaker and then dumped over ice is basically the way he did it.
And that's one serving?
Well, that's a cocktail. That is I don't know why I was a little in the bag when he was telling me what was in it or whatever, but we had to name it. So I called it the Bitter Man. And I don't know why I called it the Bitter Man.
The
he said something with bitters or something like that. And I just called it the Bitter
Bitters
Man.
In it?
No, I don't know why I called it that, but that's the name.
It's like a lemon, like a lemonade sangria. It's like a citrusy sangria.
See,
like with
I
that level of a kick.
It's like a mangria Hatton.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Either way, I completely turned the corner on this guy. I said, knock yourself out, buddy.
You are the best.
Yeah. And
wait, was he vaguely douchey before he made the drink?
No, he was perfectly nice. I was just prepared to be underwhelmed. And then especially, like I said, we got the wrong glasses here. And he did it over the right ice. And he had it just right in the presentation and everything. But I was, and you know, like I said, I had a couple glasses in me already. But when I tasted it, I was just like, holy shit, this stuff is good.
Is it like that part of the movie where you take one sip and you go, oh, you are Simon such and such?
Yes. Yes. And then I got an erection. All right. So that's what I did today. And then I ate a whole bunch of kielbasa, a whole bunch of ribs, I ate like 7 different animals and then one thing that had 8 animals mixed into each other and put into a casing. Wow. And then I went home and took the world's longest nap and
you
felt good
after
about
that.
Myself. Yes. I don't know if we're talking about it on the air, but I was just saying off the air, I brought in the Rolling Stone magazine. Somebody tweeted me that this podcast was in Rolling
Stone.
You
said it off the air.
Off the air. And then I didn't think about it again. And then I was picking up some Chinese food, and I was waiting around. I got there early, and I went into the Rite Aid, and I bought some deodorant, some shit. And by the way, bad sign when you go into – you guys have experienced this – It's one of those, again, like there's certain markers for how you know your city's a piece of shit. As I've said, if you go into a gas station and they pump it for you, that's a good thing. If you go into a gas station and you pump it yourself and then pay, that's the middle ground. And then the worst thing is when you go to a gas station, you have to pay in advance. That means you're living in a shitty city. And there's lots of markers for shitty cities. When you go into the Rite Aid, when you go into the drugstore and you open the little clear plexiglass thing to get the fucking Rite Aid, I mean, to get the Rite Aid, to get the deodorant, and all of a sudden, Rite Guard, and the thing starts going off, like beep, beep, beep. And I was going for two sticks of Tom's of Maine. And it was like, then it went into hyper, like whoop, 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 whoop. And it's like, I'm trying to buy deodorant. Fucking deodorant.
Yeah.
Like, it's not Robitussin. It's not something I'm going to cook up in my lab and make trucker speed out of. Like, literally deodorant. And if you want your shave cartridges, you want some Gillette cartridges, you got to go find the guy with the key ring. And he's got to open the shark cage where they keep the condoms as well. Right. And I thought, what? This is not a good sign. And pretty sure whatever you're charging for this elaborate alarm system is being passed on to me and the price of this deodorant. But it's also weird if you're like us and you don't really want to get looked at very much. Mm-hmm. And all I wanted to do was open it and grab it as fast as I can. There's no 5-second grace period. It's when it opens, alarm goes off. If you keep it open for more than 3 seconds, it goes into big-time alarm mode.
The deodorant could flee.
Right.
Are they hemorrhaging money with all the deodorant theft? What's going on?
I don't know. Do you guys, if they caught any vans loaded with deodorant heading for Mexico, or has there ever been a situation where you were walking and some guy in an alley, like, put him in, like, hey, man.
This is a stick up.
Yeah. This is a roll up. Yeah. So either way, it was like shit. So I said, well, I'm here. So I was walking through the magazine and I said, oh, Rolling Stone. And then I was like, wait a minute, somebody said we were in Rolling Stone. The podcast was in Rolling Stone. And I went and thumbed through it, and sure enough, it is. We are. And it's nice, but it's funny. And it's always this weird thing. Now, you guys tell me, Dave Damashek entering the studio. You guys tell me if this is weird or a dig. I can always tell when there's a slight dig. Whenever I get called Dr. Drew's sidekick from Love Line.
Yes.
Because I was the host of the show.
I read in Rolling Stone.
But would you call Conan the sidekick and Andy Richter what?
Like, whatever.
I was the host. Now, I'm not saying better than, more important than. I'm just saying when the show would start, Drew would sit there and I would start the show. You're listening to Love Line. Dr. Drew, board certified physician, addiction specialist. Yeah. I would do the whole thing. Right.
Just like Andy Richter says, are you ready for Conan O'Brien?
Right. And then when we would go to commercial, I would go to commercial. And then when the guest would come in, Drew would just sit back and I would interview the guest. And then when we'd come back from commercial, I'd bring us back. And then when we ended the show, I would end the show and do all the business of the show. Yet I was his sidekick. And, maybe I'm getting my panties in a bunch, but why not the wildly more accurate co-host of a show that was co-hosted by two people?
Yes. But also, they called you Ultra Broy. They call this podcast Ultra Broy, which I understand, but I'm not a bro.
Hell yeah, it is, dude.
Right.
Ultra Broy. Greetings, everyone.
I take that hit right in the ovaries.
I can't even read, by the way, so I'm like, that says Ultra Bro Y. Why am I Ultra Bro?
Ultra Browy.
Ultra Browy? Yes. Are they making fun of my brows? Dave, you want to take a hit off
Look at that. Everybody has their own cocktail.
Here, you can have
By the way,
I get drunk.
Yes.
Let me just say something to you. You gave me a bottle before I walked out the door. It was very generous of you. You told me you put it over some ice, and you've just stamped your ticket to Cloud 9. I took your instruction, and you were absolutely right. You did not you did not oversell. It's delicious.
Well, now the cocktail made with Mangria, mixed by mixologist Simon Ford, or as I know him, Cy-F.
Very nice. Yeah, it's a slap in your face. Of course, in the radio business, not that I have much experience in it, but from what little I have, if you have a co-host, you determine the first thing, who's going to drive the show? That's what they say. You were the driver. You were in the A chair. You had to make it go, the format.
Yeah, I would sit in the chair that controlled literally the chair. That's how I knew I was late, by the way. If Drew was ever sitting in my chair, that meant I was cutting it very close because there was the chair that controlled the phones, and he would need to sit in that. So I controlled the phones. I interviewed the guests, and I started and ended the show, but I was a sidekick.
That is the greatest story I've ever heard.
So don't you get the idea, and I don't think this is like an bro-y, like ultimate bro-y show, although Dave and his number one sports, I'll make my football picks in a second. We'll drink a little more Mangrove. But the point is this is not
don't
a male.
Don't forget to rate me, you guys.
This is not done and done. This is not a male-oriented program. I think that is written by people. I'm positive that people just saw The Man Show, or better yet, didn't see The Man Show, and then just went, if that's that guy who drinks the beer, who does the whatever, and then they just sort of write whatever. Like they do their interview before, or they write the review before they listen.
Well, the specific episodes he mentioned were ones that were during the Best Of week. Okay, let's see. Loose, foul-mouth, ultra-bro-y. He talks porn with Jimmy Kimmel, disses Coldplay with Seth MacFarlane, and debates the best ways to die with Bryan Cranston.
All right. Well, got some good guests in there, and they say we're number one and all that good stuff. And, you know, ultra-bro-y. It's not necessarily an attack, but sidekick. All right. Dave Damashek. And it's number one sports.
A pleasure to see you all.
Great to see you.
Last week. I was outright absent. Listen, no one felt worse about it than Dave Damashek did.
Where's the sports?
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll do it in just a second there, Bald.
That was last week. We're wondering where the sports
I see. Yes, look, I felt like a heel, but it couldn't be helped. The NFL demands a great deal out of me. We're in season, you know.
So
I apologize.
Let me give a little love.
That seemed a little angry.
Sorry.
But it wasn't. You were distracted.
No, I was just distracted in reading, and I want to give a little love to one of our sponsors, and then we'll do some sports with Dave Damashek.
If that's okay with Bald Brian.
I'm interested.
Who's the sports?
Shadow Stevens is coming in here. I forgot. He's a radio guy. He was also Fred. I think Fred of Federated.
Yeah, Federated. And Hollywood Squares.
And Hollywood Squares. But more importantly, what I forgot about, early on involved with K-Rock. Oh. Very early on involved with K-Rock and programming K-Rock. Very influential in my life. All right, Damashek.
Shall we hit it? All right, hit it, Bald.
Yeah.
It's time for Dave Damashek's number one sports. Number one. Sports. Do it, Dave.
Teague and Company, let me tell you something. Episode 100 of the Dave Damashek football program, available on iTunes, recorded earlier today with the great A.J. Hawk of the Green Bay Packers.
Wow.
And a cast of thousands. The only thing that's missing, Adam Carolla. Where's Adam Carolla been? I haven't, to be fair, I've not extended the invitation. That's probably where he's been.
Yes,
always
to be
generous
accurate.
With his time and everything else. So, yes, we have to rectify that, too. I feel a little bad because you know, Rich Eisen, you know, you've enjoyed, you've been down there in Culver City and paid a visit there. But
sure.
Perhaps so we can work something out.
I would love to do that. I'm just laughing because I love going down there and doing his thing and the Marshall Faulk and all that. And I love the fact that he kicked me square in the asshole with a football the last time we
went
out.
Twice! Didn't he do it two in a row? It seems impossible to do. You couldn't do it on purpose.
He kicked, I think it was twice in a row, and I made myself as small as I could possibly make myself. I really did. I mean, it was really... Like, I felt like a Columbine student. Like, I literally made myself, like, I heard gunshots down the hall, and I got under the desk, and I tried to make myself disappear, and he still kicked me right in the tuchus, as you would say.
Man, oh, man.
You shouldn't have bullied him like that.
So ultra bro-y.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. So the two AFC teams hooked up, the two best in the AFC, I should say, the Houston Texans and the Baltimore Ravens, both 5-1, entered the game last Sunday with just that one loss. The Houston Texans came out of it, though, with a resounding victory. 43-13, I believe, was the final score there.
Yeah.
How say you, Ace and company? You know, Allison, we always look forward to your insights on what's going down.
I've been thinking all week about it.
And also Bald Brian to a much lesser degree. Mm-hmm. What's everybody think now about these Bald Birdies with Joe Flacco? Do you believe now that Joe Flacco can win the big one?
Well, I don't like it one bit.
No, indeed. You don't like...
You guys take it over. Tell him why.
Flacco just got his ass kicked, right?
Yes. He got embarrassed. Yes.
Yeah.
No Ray Lewis, no Ladarius Webb, their top cornerback now. Beaten up Baltimore Ravens team. Seemed dependent on Joe Flacco carrying the load. I say here and now, he ain't up to the task.
Right, but then next week he'll come out and he'll go 28 for 37 and he'll have three TDs and no picks and a quarterback rating of 107 and then everyone will be back again. You know, I mean, the thing about quarterbacks and the great ones, it's consistency. Because all these guys can put together a great outing and then they have a horrible outing. And then you start doubting them. That's like Michael Vick or something. And then when the dust settles on their career, it's actually worse for the franchise. It's like either be in a great relationship or a shitty one that you can get out of. Not one where, you're thinking about dumping her.
Okay.
Next thing you know, you get a blowjob and you're back. You start her on your fantasy team again. She's back in your roto league. And then it starts going south again, and then it comes back again. That's like one of these things where it's like you have Vic as your quarterback. You blink your eyes, and 8 years went by with 500 ball. You know, but he was so – there was so much promise there. You know, there was so much there. It's so much easier when a guy is just a bust and you just toss him, or someone's just good. It's that in-between guy that'll just almost kill a franchise. Like, you really should hope your guy just goes bust rather than 500. Flacco certainly has not proven himself amongst the elite.
Who's the ultimate example of that, do you think?
I gotta say, Ace, I really sincerely find that to be keen analysis, and I was used too many adverbs, which in a way is patronizing to you. It's a condescending thing. I always
and
say,
it's ultra bro-y.
It is. Well, that's for sure. I'm just playing into. No, you're exactly right. When these guys are in the middle, that's the worst thing. You need a top 8, top 10 QB, generally speaking, to win a Super Bowl. Not
right.
to be good, not to get to the playoffs, but
right.
to win the Super Bowl, almost always it is with, these days, a great QB, and you're right. I completely agree. I think that happens with all, you see that with entire teams. They're good enough to get into the playoffs, like NBA teams. They're always in the playoffs, which is not good. You want to be a lottery team. If you're going to not win at all, be really bad so you get high draft picks and can fix the situation.
Yeah, and getting back to Vic, I would say that guy is Vic because he's so flashy, so talented. Mm-hmm. He does
tantalizes you.
Yeah, he plays a shitty game, and then all of a sudden he makes a play that's going to make everyone's highlight reel for the season, and you just won it so badly. Versus, you'd be much better off with like Matt Hasselbeck or someone like that, where there's no flash, there's no speed, there's no footwork, there's no anything. It's just he'll get you more wins when the dust settles on the career.
Two other good examples are with the San Diego Chargers, Phil Rivers, currently, and of 80s vintage, Dan Fouts. Both guys, good. They put up good numbers, but they never seem to get over the hump.
Fouts is a Hall of Famer, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in the Hall of Fame. So what? How many Super Bowls did he play?
No, I agree with you.
Play in a Super Bowl.
I don't think it matches your criteria.
Yeah, but still.
One of us? We both did a yeah, but still. I don't know what that means.
Dueling yeah, but still.
All right.
Anywho, so that's the big story, that the Houston Texans look to be the best in the AFC while the Atlanta Falcons come back from their bye week to play Michael Vick and the Philadelphia Eagles in the city of brotherly love. So we look forward to that one.
No,
the Steelers,
no prison. By the way, I was talking to the aforementioned Dan Dunn, who's from Philly, about Philly and about the fans. And I basically just said, look, all that needs to be said about the Philly fans is you guys were the first stadium probably in history worldwide to have a jail in the basement and a judge. Actually, they had a judge in the basement. Like, it wasn't, they had a whole court system going on in the basement. That's where most people just keep, you know, empty kegs. You guys had a whole system going on down there with bailiffs and prisons and judges and stuff.
We have too many. We have to adjudicate these things. Our court systems will be tied up for months if we don't.
I just thought what else? We were talking about having the siren go off when you go and get the men in speed stick out of the fucking Rite Aid thing. That's a bad sign. When your city has a essentially a small working prison in the basement.
Yes.
That's saying something about your fans and your city.
It is a great thing that and Oakland is another city that has that kind of negative reputation. Its fans or its teams really embody that. You know, the Flyers of hockey, they right. love, they're the Broad Street Bullies. It is a funny thing. Now, it's gone the other way. Philly fans were so proud of this reputation for so many years. Now they fight back. They get angry at you if you say, like, you know, you guys booed Santa Claus. You cheered when Michael Irvin had a career-ending injury and so on. Like, dude, that hasn't happened in so long. All right, but it happened, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, they booed Santa Claus.
You kind of can't undo the fact that you cheered when Michael Irvin had a career-ending
injury.
To be
fair, the whole booing Santa Claus thing, and look, Allison, please take this in spirit, which is 10, at least 85% Jew in that crowd. And maybe to 90%, okay?
And so, on the field.
Yeah, and, obviously on the field, Vic as well. So not huge fans of St. Nick. That's all I'm saying. That's probably in this broadcaster's eyes. That's what was going on. That's how I saw it.
Oh, that reminds me. I have to get back to Wilbert Montgomery on his Pesach invitation. That was very generous of him to offer that to me. Harold Carmichael's going to be there.
These are all
Shady McCoy will be there.
Greats from the Eagles days.
All right.
Great sitcom though, right? The sort of night court that takes place in the basement of the Philly.
Oh, yes.
Of the Philly Stadium. Stadium Judge.
It got definitely
Dandy
more.
Coleman is.
Stadium Judge.
And you have to do it this way. Dabney Coleman is still alive, quietly. Then you go, Stadium Judge. Is he still alive?
Yeah, Dabney's still kicking.
Then he's Stadium Judge. And he's got the Eagles jersey on.
That's how he does it.
Yeah,
I like that. That's a great idea. Well, listen, there's more meat on that bone than there is in Mob Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost, by the way, Animal Practice.
No, who so could have ever? Nobody. Blindsided.
It's already gone. I'm
you
sad
never
about
expect.
It. I never
no.
got to check. I never even got to catch it. Here's it. So I was in Oakland over the weekend, and I don't. Have you been there? Have you guys? Ace, I remember years ago you telling a story about stand up that you went up there to do stand up or something.
That's where I thought about killing myself.
I was born there.
Is that actually true, Ace? You thought about killing yourself?
I thought as I was driving over this bridge in a rainstorm after doing some horrible comedy that if I drove off of this bridge, it would be a push. that's what I was thinking. I wasn't thinking, I need to go home and kill myself. But I remember thinking, if you were going to do it, now would be the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I remember thinking.
I see. That's I don't know if that's
well,
Aqua bro.
Don't, yes, my grandfather used to say, don't bottom out on a bridge. You don't want to be on a bridge when you're bottoming out.
I've had that thought, though, not to go a little too dark or very dark, which is, okay, I'm not going to take my life, but maybe I'm not going to save it.
That's right.
Yeah.
I had it happen.
I said dark.
I almost got hit by a train in a pickup truck once driving through, Simi Valley a million years ago, framing some house on some avocado orchard back when Simi Valley was empty and stuff. And there's no train crossing. And it was like me, and I was super depressed. It was me and this guy, Tom, and he was driving the truck. And then all of a sudden, this commuter train just went blowing past us as we were just sort of going over a little dirt road, like in the middle of the sticks. We almost got crushed by this thing. And I just kind of remember, he was like, oh, my God, that train almost hit us. I was like, yeah. And that was
what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, I had the feeling of like, wouldn't have to go to my shitty job.
What? I always think that, too. Mm. I think, you know what? If Damashek checks out tomorrow, the world will just collectively say, like, all right, enough's enough. We got it already. And there was nothing left that was going to happen,
that,
right?
We said that years ago. We don't have to check
believe
out.
Believe me, I know, at least 8-10 years ago. All right, we got it. Goodbye already. Right. See you. Show yourself the door. Thank you for someone helping us with that. So I'm in Oakland. I just want to say this. I think Oakland is now, I consider it an underrated city. It is injured by being in the shadow of America's greatest city, San Francisco.
Yes.
But I love this place.
There are nice parts of Oakland.
Yeah, I'm going back up there for football games in the future.
Yeah. Here's the deal, though. You have a shitty city and a shitty job by the way people respond to it. Like when they go, hey, not so bad. They go up a bunch of octaves. And yeah. They go, hey, listen. I was in Oakland. It was fine. It was fine.
And they turn into Phil Rosenthal.
Yeah, no one does that with Seattle. You're you know, right. Go up like 10 octaves. And I always said that.
Well, where do you think I'm from? You think you've talked to Pittsburgh, me about Pittsburgh
it's the same
in
thing.
That tone? Exactly.
Yeah.
I got to tell you.
No, listen.
Kimmel and I went out there. It wasn't so bad.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, true. It was fine. It was up. It was a river.
They do that when I say that we record in Glendale.
No! No, they do that.
I'm unable to control the pitch or volume of my voice.
And by the way, they do that with your job. Because if you have a shitty job, yeah. If you have a shitty job, they will heap as much good at. Conversely, if you have a cool job, they will go the other way with it too. Meaning, when I used to do morning radio, people would do this all the time. Adults, again, we have to teach people some fucking couth, even if we have to keep continuously kneeing them into the groin. Wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. Kiss your fucking couth. Learn some couth. They would do this to me all the time. They go, oh, what are you doing? And I go, I'm doing morning radio. Oh, when is that? It's also weird that people don't know radio schedules at this advanced age of their life and our society. Mm-hmm. You know, but she, I remember Joan Cusack did our radio show once, and she was like, this is awesome. This is a lot of fun. This is great. When do you guys? She did it on a Wednesday. And so she was like, so every Wednesday from what, 9:30 to 10? And I'm like,
I think her exact words were, you guys do this every day?
Yeah, there was. But first off, Joni, you're from Chicago. She's from Chicago, and she's 50 years old. Like, she had no idea. Yeah, we just do it Wednesdays. We only put we cobbled
she's
this
in show business. Yeah,
we cobbled this group together so we could interview you, and then we'll all disband and go our own way. Like, so people do a thing where they go. They would say to me all the time, "They go, so what do you do? What are you doing now?" And I'd go, "I'm doing morning radio." Oh. What time? When's that? What's the shift? 6 a.m. to 10 a.m.? Oh, wow. And then they pause and they go, what time do you have to wake up? And they fucking know. Mm-hmm. I mean, do the fucking math, Dick. Like, oh, it's first off, it's not noon.
7 a.m.
Yeah.
I sleep the first hour.
Yeah. What I do is I get up around 9 a.m. I get up between 9 and noon. I'll go down to the Y. I'll read the fucking, I'll read the Wall Street Journal cover to cover. Then I'll play dominoes with strange black guys at the park for a while. And then if the feeling strikes me, I'll wander into work. But that's me. And then I do this thing. I don't know, 4:45, 5 a.m. Oh, I'd kill myself. Like, literally, my people say to me a million times, I would kill myself. And I go, you do understand I have to do this tomorrow. I didn't say I used to do morning radio. I'm saying I am doing morning radio. I would kill myself. Again, not couth. You just, like, thinking out loud. Also, the saddest thing in the world that somehow God, nature, whoever you pray to, has designed us to be miserable waking up every single morning.
Yes.
And it's the one thing we have to do every single day. There's one. Look, you can avoid a lot of things that make you. Look, there's things that make you miserable. Like diarrhea makes you miserable. Nausea makes you miserable. There's certain things in life. You know, oral surgery makes you miserable. Thankfully, you only experience those once every 5 years, maybe, if you're lucky or whatever it is. Waking up early, you're miserable every single time. Hmm. I was miserable when I was in junior high. I was miserable when I was 22. I'm 48. I'm still miserable. You say you got to get up at 5 tomorrow? Miserable. Not. There's no taking a day off. There's no, well, I slept 12 hours a day before, so I can just go ahead and cash in some of those hours. Nope. Miserable. That's it.
That's a great, you know, interesting.
Why? Why are we designed to be miserable every
day
of our life?
I don't know, but let's not worry about how we got here. Let's fix it. What about, and I ain't jiving, some form of a caffeine IV. You sleep with it, and it
you
starts.
Can't sleep with it.
But no, you start with it. Well, I'm saying you start with it right in your arm. Good night. The last deed is to plug in your caffeine thing. You set the timer. It goes off 5 minutes before your eyes pop open. Mm. You pop open. You're ready to go. Let's start the day, everybody.
Right. Something.
That's
what in
God's
holy name are you blathering about?
Is unless you are sleeping with someone who did not have to get up that early. Because then you'd be like, oh, I'm so excited to get up. Hello, good morning.
Like, that was,
they wanted another half an hour.
I had this girlfriend. She graduated USC. Her parents were rich. And it was one of these things where she graduated USC, and now she was just taking a year to kind of like find herself while her parents were renting her a nice apartment in Beverly Hills and paying for everything. And I was having to work in Burbank by the airport. I had to be there at 7 a.m. to work with the born-again gangbangers installing closets. And the dead of winter, I had a motorcycle. And I would have to get on my motorcycle. And if anyone knows how the city's laid out, there's no way to get from sort of Beverly Hills, sort of, it was sort of like Robertson and, you know, sort of where all those Kitson, all those, mm-hmm. those trendy places, the Ivy Robertson and all those places. Mm-hmm. Robertson Olympic. There's no way to get to there, to the Burbank airport. It's all just winded up, go through the canyon, go up through Laurel Canyon, all kinds of stuff. And to be on time, I'd have to leave at like 6:15, 6:20 in the morning. It'd be dark outside.
I would kill myself.
I'd be on a motorcycle. Especially on a Sunday night when you stayed up a little late and you had a little bit to drink. And then the fucking next morning, I'd get up at 5:45, 6 o'clock. And I'd be in the bathroom, like brushing my teeth, going, I'm getting $10 an hour working with someone who's going to stab me in the fucking neck. And born again. The only thing worse is born again than born agains or born again gangbangers installing fucking closets. And she had nothing to do. She was going to, you know, take a junior college class or something like that. And I'd be in the bathroom, like brushing my teeth, and I'd get the, could you close the door?
Do you have to brush so loudly?
You should enjoy this. Wake up and enjoy. Enjoy the fact that I'm going to get on a motorcycle and go over the hill in the freezing cold and work with some fucking gangbangers for no money. Enjoy it. Like, wake up and enjoy it.
Everybody has to, you know, listen, that's a sad statement about the human condition. People do have to take those shots. Oh, that, what an ugly hat. Oh, but that hat looks good on you. But they got to, it's that thing of pointing out, hey, this is a great gig that anybody would love to have a morning
radio show. But I'll tell you, you know you have a piece of shit gig when people go up the octave and go, you know, what do? I work at a rendering plant. Oh, there you go. There you go.
There you go.
That's good. You know what? Good union, though, right? Good benefits. Take home all the sausage casing you can carry, right?
That's just the casing.
Yeah, it's good. Just
the
casing.
That's great for your forearms.
Oh,
yeah. You really get some good musculature
going.
No,
that's good stuff. Yeah, good union. Good stuff. Yeah. They try to make some sort of connection. I went to school. I mean, not full time, but I knew a guy who went to, the guy, it's very great work there. You know, like when they go.
And
when
the
they
job
start,
security.
Yeah, when they start. Going way too long on how good your job is, that means it sucks. But then again, saying you'd kill yourself if you had to get up at 4:45,
also,
not good.
You know, all you need is the adverb. If anybody ever throws the word actually into a sentence unnecessarily at you, here's what I mean. Then you know you're being condescended to. Hey, you know what? Bald Brian actually had a pretty good idea for that. That's not meant to be flattering at all.
No. Example,
wow, no. Once in a blue moon. Yeah, well, listen, that was just completely in a vacuum.
To wrap up the people.
He's actually not that bad.
The show, remember when Jay Thomas came in the first year? You were still there, and he used to do morning radio?
He was a jerk.
As he left, you know, the interview ends, he took his headphones off, went to commercial, he goes, oh, never get used to the hours.
Yeah, never get used to it. Yeah, and he just kept going.
We're 2 months into the show. We're like,
that was a perfect period at the end of his visit, as far as I was concerned. I did not find him pleasurable at all. I remember him saying, "Hey," with me sitting there, he's like, "Hey, oh, wait, what do you got this guy in here? He's got the same voice as you." Hey, creepo, I'm in here getting paid to do this. You're trying to undercut me with the right in front of the boss?
Yeah, and he did do the never get used to those hours. I did it for 5 years. I never got used to it. You never, ever.
As he walked out, that's what he said. Yes. Never used to the hours.
That's right.
Last thing for you is Kamish Goodell. Mm. He told somebody that he's thinking of getting rid of the Pro Bowl, which is a thrill to me because this is something that I've championed for a few years now.
Yeah,
is my Loser Bowl. Have we discussed my Loser Bowl? I can't remember.
Oh no, let's do it.
Okay, it's Pro Bowl. Who cares? I mean, look, you would never if I'm an NBA player or a baseball player. Yes, I'll be happy to participate in your All Star event. If it involves collision, if my profession involves running into other people, why would I possibly do that if it didn't make a difference? Why would you engage in a Pro Bowl when somebody could fall on your knee and your career would be over?
Plus,
of course, you shouldn't do that.
Well, also, first, the novelty of going to Hawaii used to be a big deal. Now it's no big whoop.
Yeah.
You know, those guys
playing in London
yeah.
this week, for God's sake.
Yeah, everyone goes away. It's the malt liquor of gambling events. It's when you know you have a problem.
Yes,
that's it's
He's
like
talking to you, cousin Sal.
No, I'm talking to myself.
You wagered on the Pro Bowl,
fucking Chaffee. Chaffee said to me after I lost the Super Bowl, and I said, well, that's it. No more. And he said, well, there's always the Pro Bowl. You know, you don't bet on the Pro Bowl. And then he said, you take the Pro Bowl. And I think he said, you always take the, he had some sort of.
Oh, please.
No, he had something
his
that made.
Reasoning made sense.
He had something. He said, oh, you always take the dog in the Pro Bowl because, you know, the team that's favorite's not trying. It was his thing. Or maybe he said you take the under because
it was either the over or it was take the dog in the points.
Yeah, you take the dog because they're not trying. You know, no one's really trying and they're not rushing the quarterback and all that kind of stuff. So you just take the dog. And I was like, this guy makes sense. Then I lost that fucking Pro Bowl, too.
That's not seeing the forest for the trees when you're taking athletic advice from Mike Chaffee.
That's a good point.
Let's take a good hard look at Mike Chaffee next time before you listen to what his insights are and what it takes to win. All right. So the Pro Bowl, I love my football, but this is not football. What would be a grand event to replace this cockamamie event? Instead, the weekend between the title games and the Super Bowl. You play the Loser Bowl. You get it sponsored by Jenny Craig or Weight Watchers. And you play the two worst teams in the league. The winner gets the first overall pick the following season. Mm-hmm. Now you got stakes. And you play it out. You find some JV field that's all burnt out. You get the worst marching band you can find. You get the most heavy set cheerleaders that you can find. Mm-hmm. And you play into the whole thing. Call it the Toilet Bowl if you want to, and get it sponsored by Lysol.
Everything is bad. Me and Artie Lang do the announcing, but
why can't I be there?
All right, you're there. And
you have the same voice.
Yeah, I almost said, and then I realized that would be an insult to you. I almost said, like, an Allison could be the sideline reporter, but then that would mean that you'd be a bad one, but we don't want that. No, so Bald Brian is our sideline girl.
Wait a minute.
No, we get Vita Guerra or something, or whatever her name was.
Christine Dolce?
Don't be a one-upper, like I said before.
Yeah, we get that fucking crackpot on the sideline, and everything's a disaster. And I agree. Yeah, he played on a shitty field.
It'd be great. Wouldn't it be a great event? And people say, who would watch that? Oh, I told this to Kimmel.
Right.
And Kimmel surprisingly didn't love it. He said, who would watch that? Who would ever watch something so stupid? And I said, everybody would watch that. That's who would watch it. At that point in the year, you're desperate for any football because you know it's about to go away. So you want to see whatever you can get.
Well, and you would
It'd
like
be relevant.
You
yes,
would,
it would matter.
Like the first pick decided, earned, not earned because you're incompetent and pathetic, but earned because you actually put together a drive or two.
I talked to Peter King about this. Obviously, one of the most prominent NFL reporters there is. I brought this up to him. His response was, it's interesting, but what if the current QB of the team if he plays well, he plays himself out of a job if the top pick is going to be a quarterback, you know? And I said, well, that's part of the strategy. What do you mean? That's perfect. So then maybe the head coach has to factor that into who he plays.
If you're the quarterback for a last place team and you're about to be replaced by a draft pick, this is a job audition for you. You're saying, I can
that's
still
right.
play.
Yeah, nobody's going to take out of the league. It's a gangbusters idea. When I put my head together with Kamish Goodell's once and for all, we're going to work this out.
I got a gangbuster idea. The Corolla Sports app. You can download the Corolla Sports mobile app and you can play.
Where's the sports?
That's right. Available for your iPhone and your Android. We got winners, baby. Top 9 winners this week going to get $25 worth of Amazon gift card. Grand prize is a trip for two to Vegas for the Super Bowl, air and hotel included. So check it out. Check out the Corolla Sports mobile app. Play and win, baby. All right, shall we do our creep of the week?
Let's do a quick one. Hit it, Bald. Creep of the week. He or she is the creep of the week. First, let me say who most certainly is not the creep of the week. the Raiderettes, 50 years worth of them. I met them this weekend up, all, you know, like 300 of these.
There's been 50 years of Raiderettes?
Isn't it hard to, the Raiders, isn't it hard to imagine? AFL, that old now, 1962.
But the Raiderettes were around from, wow.
And I was talking to one older woman who was one of the original Raiderettes. She was 13 when she started. That's something that would not happen. Isn't that funny? Most of these things, the outfits get skimpier and the, you know, they get a little more loose in their behavior.
Mm.
But one thing that does not happen is that yeah, you would not have an underage girl as a cheer, as a professional cheerleader.
It'd be weird talking to a Raiderette from, yes, you know, 1971. And I remember when the stork dropped a digit on me. Those were the days.
without some of the graphic stuff, that is exactly what they talk about, the stork and how hot so-and-so, Jim Otto. Oh, yeah, he was great. Oh, yeah, he was a wonderful. Jim
Ted
Otto.
Hendricks was a stork. I got to say, Kenny Stabler must have. They didn't have rules back then.
He was a real ladies' man.
And also the thing,
allegedly,
the thing too was they didn't really pay those guys, so you couldn't, you know, now they pay people, so they make a lot of rules, like no dating this and no doing that. Mm-hmm. Back then, you got, you know, 30 grand, maybe 25 grand, and then you worked at an auto dealership during the off season.
Diddling the Raiderettes was really part of the job.
Yeah, that was what you call a perk.
Yeah. Yeah. Otis Sistrunk needed some fringe benefit, and he took it.
Otis Sistrunk.
The best name of all time.
The greatest name.
Best looking football player, too. That bald, oh, the bald, scariest back, looking man.
Back
ever.
When bald meant something.
Come on, right here.
No, let me tell you. That's exactly right. What Ace brings up, because I was talking to these ladies about Snake Stabler. I was asking them, as I often do with ladies. I like them to compare men. And I said, so who's better? You know, Carson Palmer. I was giving them, you know, Todd Marinovich, Snake Stable. Oh, they all went Snake Stable. They all loved him with that beard. He was like, there's Otis Sistrunk.
He looks
look
like a black sloth from Goonies.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah,
and like, again, that's when bald was bald. That meant, I mean, every other guy in the league had a huge afro at that point when Otis was bald.
A woman said that to me. She said, you know, Otis Sistrunk, why doesn't he get credit for being the first bald guy? I said, that's absolute. Michael Jordan gets credit for shaving his head by choice. Otis Sistrunk was the real trailblazer.
I close my eyes. It sounds like my wife at the breakfast table this morning. Non-stop with the fucking Otis Sistrunk trailblazing stuff. It's like, enough. We get it, sweetie.
How can't you be ultra bro-y when that's your breakfast companion? Yes, of course. Of course that's the way it goes.
All right. Huge Sistrunk fan.
So
she likes the boss and Sistrunk.
The Raiderettes. Foxy. Let me tell you. I didn't have expectations. Most cheerleaders, when you see them from a distance, you say, wow, look at those women. Then you get up close, and then suddenly in half of them, but not the Raiderettes.
Wait,
quite foxy.
The ones that were Raiderettes back then, are they still foxy, though? Because
well,
they're like 63.
They're 60s. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do? Yeah.
And they don't get paid, by the way. They get paid in sis-spunk. Otis probably dropped that line a few times. You want some sis spunk?
Apparently, he's delightful. I encourage you to track him down.
Otis?
Apparently, they said he is a delightful guy. A lot of, you know who else you should talk to? Dan Fouts. Boy, I was talking to him, too. He's a lot of fun, too.
All right.
Listen, I'll talk to your friend Mike August and tell him about some
all right.
of these guys.
Book, sis spunk, and Fouts. Sorry.
Quickly, Lance Armstrong in the news quite a bit. Here's what bugs me. The whole doping, whatever, I couldn't care less about cycling. But the thing I keep hearing on the radio, and I just heard it on my way over here, is this thing. You know, I don't care if he loses his 7 titles or not because I don't care about cycling. What is it? It's a bunch of guys sitting around pedaling their feet. I hate when people make that argument when you just reduce something.
Mom does it with basketball.
What's basketball? Just a bunch of guys running around in their shorts trying to put a ball through a circle.
You take a 7-foot guy, they throw it up to him where no one else can get it, and he drops it in the hoop. Like, yeah, that's how it works.
What's pizza? It's just bread with some red stuff on it and some cheese. What's a pizza? Hey, what are women? They're just men with boobs and no wangs. I mean, how far can you play this dumb game? I hate that. So shame on
what's
you.
What's a planet? It's just a collection of rocks
it's
put together floating through the
it's
universe.
It's just a big ball. That's
with
all
an
it is.
Ocean. Yeah, I know. Thank you.
That's annoying. But here's the one that I want to name as the creep of the week. I feel bad. What kind of bag of self-esteem issues must you have if you're an alphabet letter that does not start its spelling. Spell the alphabet letter, and you don't start it with your own letter.
I know where this is going.
A. How do you spell the letter A? A-Y. How do you spell B? B-E-E.
Right.
D. D-E-E.
Right.
Now, F. F doesn't start with F. It starts with an E. Mm. What kind of weird thing is that?
That's weird.
How bad is it for F, you know, to be an F? And I don't know if there is.
Were you under the table this morning when Lynette and I were done talking about Otis Sistrunk, and then she moved right into the alphabet? Were you there? What's going on? Because you're freaking me out, dude.
She took, well, I don't want to say, well, Otis Sistrunk and something about it. But listen, so G, I think you can make a case G-E-E.
Right.
H is a weird one. How do you spell A? A-Y-C-H. At least it's in there.
Right.
The only one I could think of, though, W.
Yeah.
W has no W in it.
That's where I thought you were going.
Can you imagine being a W? I don't know if I should pity it or be outraged by it.
Yeah.
I choose the latter.
Oh, right. No. Sports. Yeah. Bert of Ernie and Bert loves W and has a W club.
Mm. Is that right? Why? Because of this?
I forget why. I just know that he loves it.
I will say.
Maybe he's into M's and he's dyslexic.
I like the.
And the show has reached a new low.
I like the letter Q.
Listen, I'm drunk. What's your excuse?
I admire the ambition of the letter Q. I want to tip my hat to the letter Q.
But
because when you think
I find it way too aspirational.
Oh, well,
overly
listen.
Ambitious.
Then yeah, cut it.
Puts on airs.
I guess it goes both ways.
Well,
maybe. But let me say this about it. You have to tip your hat to it. Because when you think of it, you think like, well, yeah, it lives down there at the bottom with X, Y, and Z. But take another look, sister. It's all the way up ahead of R, S, and T. I mean, it's way up there. It's climbing the ladder. Everybody else is so happy with where they're located in the alphabet. All of a sudden, Q's making a push. A, B, and C better be careful with themselves, or else it's going to be A, B, Q, C.
I can say this about Q too, and I'm sad to admit it, but I'm 48 years old, and I can't draw a lowercase version of a Q. I don't know. I can draw a smaller big Q. But I can't draw the small one.
Yeah.
I
what
really,
do you do? Like, are we trying to G?
I try to stay away from words that start with Q, and normally you can get by.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
right.
Thank God
you don't like quince.
It's a weird.
Everybody beep. Shut up.
Also, it's one of the most accepted uppercase first letters. You can start a word with an uppercase Q when it's not necessary and people give you a pass on it. Otherwise, it gets confusing.
In cursive, an uppercase Q, it looks like a two.
It's a number
two.
I
don't know what you're talking about.
Interesting.
It's a number two. I don't know who came up with that. That's weird, and I think it undermines the great things about that I think I just covered, the high quality aspects of the letter Q, but that gets away from my original point. I'm angry with these letters that they don't think enough of themselves, that they don't take stock and take a look in the mirror and ask themselves how they can allow themselves to be spelled with another letter, any letter other than themselves. So with that being said, letters that don't start with themselves, especially you, W, you don't even exist in the spelling of yourself. I say, jerk! You're the creep of the week. That's it.
Now's number one sports with Dave Damashek. All right, we have one more clip for everybody, and this is a Rotten Tomatoes game, but this one missing Matt Atchity.
Yep, this is 1859, the Mary Roach episode, not in this portion. We've already played that interview. Vinny Tortorich is, and he joins them for the game. Gina Grad and Brian Bishop, July of 2016. Vinny is a hoot. His 81st installment, first time played without Matt or Gray Drake. So all the counting and the numbers have been accurate this entire time. There hasn't been any missed episodes without them. This is the first time they're kind of branching out. Check it out.
All right, go ahead.
Do you want to hear the song?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Here's the guy with the fresh and rotten movie game. Now it's time, I really hope it isn't lame. Please let's go, I told.
All right, before we get started, a little business. Stamps.com. Oh, man. Feel like there's not enough hours in the day? That's the way I feel, man. Don't have time to go to the post office. Good. Stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage. Any package, any letter, right from your computer, right from your printer. Super easy. It's all we use here. It's all we've ever used here. I don't know why you would ever want to go inside another post office ever again. You got Stamps.com. They got a special. Here it is, right now. Use my name. Get a four-week trial. Try it out for a month. Got a $110 bonus offer. It includes the digital scale, which is no joke. Like, you'd think you'd get some little coaster or something. It's hefty. And I think it goes up to, like, 60 pounds.
I think it's 70 or 80.
Oh, 70 or 80?
Yeah.
All right. We'll check. Either way.
Don't be a one-upper, like I said before.
Send a car tire. Send, like, a snow tire to your aunt in Miami. Anyway. Not that she needs it. Go to stamps.com. Before we do anything else, click the microphone. Top of the homepage, type in Adam. That is stamps.com. You hit the promo code, Adam, stamps.com. All right, Matt Atchity picked these out.
Yes, he did. Bryan Cranston is in The Infiltrator. It's out this week. So this week's theme is undercover.
All right.
First movie from 1992 stars Harvey Keitel. Michael Madsen, Chris Penn spits out of the fucking blue. Steve Buscemi and Tim Roth as Mr. Orange. And Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs.
All right. Well, I love this movie. Man, did I love this movie. Had a great experience with this movie. Went and saw my buddy Philip the Juggler. Sadly passed away. Living in some place in Santa Monica at the time. And we just walked up to Wilshire Boulevard and just saw it because it was close. Used to have to see movies that were near you.
Right.
And
based on proximity. Yeah.
It sort of forced you to see movies you might not have seen, but right. It was probably a good thing that you did see it. But nothing going in. There was no buzz, there was no internet. There was nothing. No one knew who he was. We probably heard it was good, but that's about all you could do. Mm-hmm. Like now, I think you can go to the internet and really break down the game film if you want. Back then, you just had to hear something, and that was sort of enough.
A word of mouth.
And we just walked over and saw it, and I was like, God, I love this movie. Because it had that great humor, the great soundtrack, and just a great acting as well. All right, how could...
Great acting. Sort of put Steve Buscemi on the map.
How could they say that this thing was anything lower than a 94?
That sounds good. I put 91 just because maybe some of the old critics who've been around for a while maybe weren't ready for it. But I said 91.
Solid 90.
Okay, I need a clarification. I wrote down my, and I won't change it, but are we talking top critics or, because
just the regular critics.
Regular critics. I picked 80%.
80%.
Reservoir Dogs is certified fresh, and someone's on the nose at 90.
Oh!
Yes!
Yes! Oh, but the audience has it.
I said 91!
He did?
Wait, did I?
Oh, he said 80. Oh,
no, you
Gina
said 90.
Oh, yeah.
Said 90. Oh, but somebody matched the audience score at 94, so that's a 10-point deduction.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah. Google that shit. You got to Google.
Google the rules of this game? Okay.
No. Critics, Dead Nuts, 5. Yeah. Audience score, 94. That's what I have.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's the first I've heard of it.
Oh, no. I brought it up many times.
It's called the man of the people rule.
I do love that argument when you're talking to someone and I go, no, I told you 10 times. You're like, I've never heard of this before.
I can specifically recall 8 occasions.
Then I always say, what did I do?
Because it's usually, my reaction?
Well, it's usually something I don't want to happen now. Like, oh, no, that looks bad. Oh, you said you loved it. Yeah. No, it looks horrible. No, you said you liked it.
You're looking forward to it.
Really? That's what I said. What happened? All right.
Our next movie, the sinister underground group is called The Man. Or is headed by The Man, where Eddie Griffin goes undercover as undercover brother.
Oh,
boy.
Poster says it all.
Yeah, I remember this. Geez, I can't love it. Dave Chappelle's in here. Boy, it's one of those. Now, see, here's where you got to think about it. Bad could mean 41 and bad could mean 11. So
what year is this?
Probably like 99 or... 2000 or something. I remember like having him on Loveline. Eddie Griffin's on Loveline.
I'm just trying to figure out who was famous already. And
I could remember Eddie.
Chris Kattan is second build.
Gotcha.
02. Eddie was favorite.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, was probably pretty hot about then. I'm going to say the critics hated it, but these guys are all good performers, so they can take a comedy and kind of take it from single digits and get it up to 23.
Wow. I took a wild stab in the dark. I've never seen this movie. I said 60 because they made a sequel. So wow. I'm figuring that maybe...
They made a sequel. I did not know that.
Anybody? Oh, I thought they did.
Right. Undercover Brothers.
Mm. I did not know that.
Okay, anyway, I said 60. I could just be my Waterloo here.
26.
I had a client who used to make these type of movies, and even if they were a 10, they would make another one because enough people would actually go to them. 39.
Mm. 39. All right. Gina's got
26.
26.
Undercover Brothers certified
fresh. Oh, no way.
77.
Yes. Holy mackerel.
There goes my 5-point deduction.
Wow.
You guys want to keep playing?
Oh, man.
No, we do not.
That was a huge
spread.
Did
they make a sequel?
Wait, that can't be.
No.
Listen, take your 77 and hit the bricks, man. Forget about the sequel.
All right.
Wow.
And that's a weird one because very rare that that the critics in this kind of comedy have it 10 points plus higher than the audience. This is normally movies like this are like the audience has it at 71 and the critics have it at 31. Like that's.
Do you think it was because it was maybe in the vein of I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, which was fantastic?
Could have been. Maybe it was.
I got to justify like, this somehow.
I don't. Maybe Dave Chappelle was
this?
Just
no.
Hot. Is it good?
It's not bad.
Okay.
It's not good, but it's definitely not bad.
I'm watching
but comedy, comedies that aren't good don't get 77%.
It was pretty good. I think it should be a little closer to 65, but it got a pass because everyone just bought into this is the world that we're doing because it was, you know, the SNL sketch before.
Oh,
it was?
Wasn't it?
No.
Wasn't it one of the characters?
Now
in
you and Brian are even.
I don't know.
Oh, now we're going. All right. Jesus. Wow. All right. We got some making up to do.
I'm thinking something else. Sorry. Right. Ladies man.
Ladies man. Yeah.
Marlon and Sean Wayans play two FBI brothers who mess up a drug bust. So they're punished by being forced to escort a pair of socialites in the 2004 comedy White Chicks.
I'm shell shocked from the last round.
I'd be a horrible Wayans brother. I'd be horrible because they start. They start pitching these ideas, and I'd be like, how much time in makeup every day? 4 hours. What time do we start shooting?
Well,
8 a.m.
4 hours putting the makeup on. It's another 2.5 to get it off.
Yeah. So what time do you need me in the chair? About 4:30 a.m. every day. I could just be like, I feel the same way with, like, Jim Carrey and Cat in a Hat or whatever whatever it is.
The mask.
Yeah,
well, that too, but
No, the Grinch.
Oh, Grinch.
And things like that. Like, 5 hours of makeup every day, like, insanity. The whole prosthetics and everything. I just make something funny. Mm. All right.
I'm scared now after Undercover Brother.
All right. I'm going to say we got points to make up, and I got to go with 13. Because I got to go bold.
I'm pretty sure this was pretty bad. I said 25.
I'm going the wrong direction. I don't know what's up, what's down. I said 48.
20.
Please be me.
White Chicks is rotten at 15%.
I gotta go.
All right, we made up a little ground, but not that much. What'd you have, 28?
I said 25.
Oh, 25.
I said 20.
All right.
Next movie, Bradley Cooper curls his hair. Christian Bale is fat and bald.
Yeah, so good.
And Amy Adams shows a lot of side boob in 2013's American Hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this? It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think.
No, I thought it was good. I thought it was like a little more, I thought it was aware of itself or something, like it knew it was good or cool or something. It was one of those movies, like,
stylized.
We all know what we're doing here, which I never like, but
still it had the goods.
It was, well done
movie.
Yeah, I remember being not, I was more into the performance and less in the plot or something. Like, I can't remember how it ended or like if it felt satisfying or it didn't feel like a.
That's true.
The usual movie has like beginning, middle. Ooh, right. Here's what happened at the end.
Yes,
you know?
It did have a pacing issue.
It was a bit sprawling.
Yes.
Yeah. And I didn't find myself like, you see like the Shawshank Redemption. It's like, oh, he got out of prison. He made it out after all these years. You know, this was one of those when it ended, it was just like, I guess we're done watching all these great performances.
It was a bit confusing. I actually liked it more the second time I saw it.
And period garb. All right. Well, critics, darling. But how darling? I'm going to say
93.
88.
87.
American Hustle is certified fresh at 93.
Oh, wow. Damn. We did not need that, people. See, people had it at 74. I guess they got a little confused. Yeah.
And we'll play this round just for the fuck of it, just like Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg made this movie just for the fuck of it. 2013's Two Guns.
Oh, never heard of it. Now, you blocked this from your memory because they ran spots. They ran a lot of spots for this.
Is this supposed to be action, comedy? What's the vibe? Because I can't tell by the
poster. It's a French farce. French farce. Yeah.
Surrealist, yeah, surrealist. Sort of existential crisis. What are we doing here? What's life all about?
Perfect. It's literally the back-to-back firing Glocks with a helicopter in the air.
Money rains.
It looks like a fake poster. So
it does, which is never a good sign when it's a real poster.
Okay,
but all right, boy, everyone's got a lot to make up with. My four and the dead nuts on. We did not need that.
Did you see this?
No. Yeah. I like both these guys. I was just like, I haven't heard anything good about it. I'm going to say 37.
The only thing I remember about this is that I think I heard it was better than I was afraid it was going to be. So I said 65.
39.
I've never even heard of it. I put 12 based on the poster.
Two Guns is fresh at 64.
Oh! Brian is destroying everybody.
Never speak of this game again.
I should never speak. Was that the... I hope that was the last one.
And the audience, 66.
Well, that's one of those things where the audience saw it, like the critics, right? Jesus Christ.
Let's hear some numbers.
Bringing up the rear, Vinny Tortorich, 111. Gina Grad, 109. The Ace Man, 89 points. Bald Brian, 24.
Oh! Wow.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Wow. Yeah. Mazel tov.
All right. Enjoy that.
Move on.
Yeah.
I will.
Rotten or fresh.
Have fun bragging to your Korean neighbors about that one.
This isn't a game.
See if they
this
understand.
Is my life.
I'll go back to my lily white community.
How'd you know I had a Korean neighbor?
I know where you live, man. See if Mitsuk is impressed by this win if you ever break through that barrier.
It is K, first of all.
Why would you have Rotten Tomatoes?
That was Vinny Tortorich sitting in for the Rotten Tomatoes game back in 2016.
You guys have him on for every game. He's so good.
I completely agree. I love that. All right, before we get out of here, I want to remind everybody about Tommy John. Look, you've had enough to deal with this year, so don't overthink what you want to get others if you're getting a belated gift from the holidays or just want to get something for yourself. Look, it's kind of cold in the house. Get some nice loungewear. All right? Say bye to those old stained sweatpants. Get yourself some Tommy John. It's warm. It fits perfectly. Gio loves it.
There's nothing more comfortable. I'm not wearing them right now due to an aforementioned dog slobber incident. So they're in the dryer. I'm wearing regular track pants, and I'm miserable. Don't be like me. Buy two pairs of the lounge pants from Tommy John. They are so comfortable.
That's right. Order now. Go to TommyJohn.com/classics for $30 off site-wide. And there might be some last-minute holiday deals there, too, but for a limited time only. So check it out. $30 off, limited time, at TommyJohn.com/classics. TommyJohn.com/classics. See site for details. And that'll do for Corolla Classics. We have one more episode before the Adam Carolla Show returns. So we'll see you tomorrow in the Corolla Classics feed for our special Sunday shows. My name's Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo, and get it on.
Hey movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
If you want to spice up any occasion, bring the sabor with Modelo Chelada.
A mouthwatering mix of authentic Mexican beer, bold fruit flavors, and a hint of spice. Bring the heat with Sandia Picante, a taste of the tropics with mango y chile, or the citrus burst of limón y sal. There's bold flavor in every can. Modelo Chelada. Bring the sabor. Drink responsibly. Modelo Chelada flavored beers. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.